listening to www.peoplesinternetradio.com, seeking solutions.
You all about to get on this record. Getting to be a strange place. A lot of crazy things are happening. A lot of questions need to be asked. A lot of puzzles need to be put together. And here are all the pieces that you're going to get from one man right here on The Big Puzzle with your host, the one and only man from Canada, Mr. Barry Ritz.
Well, good day, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and you gators and grannies, to this Sunday's edition of The Big Puzzle. My name is Barry Prince. I'm coming to you live from my kitchen here in northern British Columbia. And we're broadcasting through the facilities of People's Internet Radio and being simulcast also on shakeandwakeradio.com. Welcome to the show, folks. And as I always start my shows off with a little bit of a plug for the stations, if you can help out at all, we are totally viewer-supported stations, and any help that you can give to either station, I know, would be much appreciated. I know Christmas is coming, but even the price of a coffee, if you can fire it their way, every little bit helps. Anyways, and I'm going to start my show off with my thank you to my producer, because last week I forgot to thank him at the end of the show, and I always try and do that, but of course I get brain farts, and sometimes I forget. So thanks, Steve, for what you're doing. I'm joined the first hour here by my friend Ron Stevens, and I'll call him that because I've known Ron for many years now, and I've had him on numerous times on my show, and I always love his input. I also apologize right now that I'm not in the People's Internet Radio chat room. I'm using a brand new laptop here, and I tried to punch in the room, and it tells me I got to go through a whole bunch of stuff to get in there, so I'll be in a few minutes. Excuse my language. Anyways, Ron, thanks for joining me today, and welcome to the show as always, my friend.
Who's Ron Stevens?
Huh?
This is Ron's... Bill Walker.
Oh. Oh, sorry. I got the wrong number. Hey, Steve.
How you doing, bro?
Oh, as long as it's not Justin Trudeau, you're welcome to join the show.
Ron, I wish I had the accent. I could come on as Klaus Schwab.
Hey, I got his book coming. It should be here in 2 days. I ordered it a week ago. And I'm going to let people read that one, Ron, and go, whoa, just a coincidence, buddy.
Can you imagine when Klaus Schwab was born and they hit him on the ass? They hung him upside down and hit him on the ass and looked at his mother and went, I think you just bore a psychopath.
Yeah, well, we all know about him. Or I shouldn't say we all, because a lot of people don't even know who the man is or any of his background. But any of us that have been looking into him, Ron, know what he's all about. Just like Christopher.
I got to tell you a little story about my town, which is only 7,500 people down here in Ontario. A white girl and a black girl went to the council, and we have people putting up Black Lives Matter signs, you know, stop racism or something. I doubt very much if even close to 1% of the population here is black. So I guess somebody put some signs up around town, that white people are okay too. And they called the cops, and the cops run around taking the signs down. And I guess somebody else put up some signs, don't all lives matter? And took them all down. And the mayor's ran around ranting and raving about racism when 99.99% of the population here is white. And the mayor's white. Everybody on the council's white. But just all this racism nonsense. It was absolutely ridiculous. But that's the mentality of those people who are on councils in every town and city in this country, all implementing the UN and the World Economic Forum.
It's not their mentality, Ron. They're just doing what they're told to be doing, man. And they're
part
in the game.
They have an IQ of about 8.
That high.
But they're very dangerous people.
They are.
We have an open seat on the council right now because the deputy mayor died. And I'm trying to decide whether or not I'm going to stick my neck in there again right now. Or just educate the people for the next election. We'll have to check it out and see what happens here. But, we are the power. You know, people have to understand that. You know, we have, if you add up all the bureaucrats and all the politicians and all your councils, they make up a very tiny percentage of the population. Which means we're the power, and people have to come to that determination that we are the power. You know, we were indoctrinated in the school into bowing down to so-called authority, and people have a hard time, you know, standing up to so-called authority because it fears them.
Well, that's been indoctrinated into us since the time we were born.
Well, we just have to understand this is our country. We've built everything in it. Politicians don't build anything. Bureaucrats don't build anything. We built everything in our nation, meaning it's our nation. And we're the richest nation on the planet. We got less population than the state of California. We're the second largest landmass country. And we have approximately $35 trillion in resources. So why is anybody sleeping in a tent?
Well, we've had this conversation lots of times, Ron. And you know, and I know that the rest of the world's just licking their lips looking at our resources, knowing that Canada right now under our current government is a very soft underbelly. It's so easy for them to operate in Canada because they're being supported by our government. We hear about the reports that came out from Rebel Media this week. I go, Ron, you know, these reports that come out this week, and these are factual. If that doesn't wake people up, then I don't know what will, because what was revealed in those reports, of course, the mainstream media, you didn't hear crickets about it on CBC or CTV or Global, but it was picked up by other news stations around the world. Tucker Carlson did a big blurt on it. Hannity did a big blurt on it. They're reporting it overseas, but crickets out of our mainstream media of Trudeau's involvement with the Chinese army and what he's doing, training their generals over here in cold weather warfare. It was all exposed this week. If that doesn't wake people up, I don't know what will, Ron. I mean, this guy is treasonous to the core. He's outright committing treason against the people of Canada, training our enemies on our soil. Camp Petawawa, close to you, Ron.
Well, see, I have a real problem with the right and the left. I never hear the right complain about what the right's done. They always complain about what the left's done, but they never complain about what the right's done. And they're just leading the people astray. You know, the left is bad, the right is good. Well, the right is as guilty as the left. Harper signed a deal with China, which is a very nefarious deal. Harper signed us on to the UN 2030. Mm-hmm. Harper spent $30 million of our dollars to set up the Aga Khan in Ottawa. Joe Clark is the head of the committee who gives out the award for the Global Pluralism Award, the Aga Khan Global Pluralism Award. But I never hear the right mention any of that stuff. The people in Alberta who want to use their resources, and our whole country needs to use our resources. I don't hear them complaining about Harper signing the deal, the G7 deal, to end the use of fossil fuels in Canada.
Well, I'm not going to argue any of that with you.
So what you have is you have a bunch of ignorant people hating the left and jumping on board with the right when the right is as guilty as the left. And that's not gonna solve any problems.
All I was pointing out with this article, Ron, is it's got people shaking their heads in Canada. And where they go with that after they get their heads shook a little bit is up to them, but it's definitely got people in Canada talking. And so it should.
This has been going on a while. You know, Warburg stated in 1950, which is 70 freaking years ago, that we're going to have a world government. Mm-hmm. But we need a mechanism, i.e. a problem.
Climate change.
It can only be solved at the global level.
COVID-19.
What did they pick? They picked environment.
That was the first attack.
And then in 1958, the first global warming movie came out called Goddess on Chain, which unleashed the Gaia syndrome on us. Mm-hmm. And they've been pushing that ever since. And in 1958, they said all the ice was going to melt. And Miami would be under 100 feet of water.
Well, every projection they've ever said has not come true. We know that, yeah. Ron. We know that.
So
it's all fear-mongering.
The people have been deceived for an awful long time. And they need to wrap their brain around the reality of what we're facing. Because this is not up to the right or the left. This is only up to the people. This idea that let's vote for Maxime. Why? He's one of them. And they're just leading the people astray. This is up to the people and only the people. Screw the politicians. There is no political party other than the liberals or the conservatives that are going to hold power at the federal level. The idea of the two-party system was born out of the French Revolution, which was specifically a divide-and-conquer tactic, which has been working really good. Mm-hmm. Right? Course. Have the people fighting
against
each other.
Well, look what they're doing right now.
Yeah, have the people fighting against each other on the right and the left while they implement their agendas in here.
Got to keep them distracted, Ron.
That's all it is a distraction.
You got to keep them fighting amongst themselves. They're not going to look what's going on over there. They're too busy cursing their neighbor because they're not wearing a mask. Or reporting their neighbors because they're not wearing masks. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't get that mask thing at all.
Well, Ron, neither do I. Nobody, you know, when I talk, that is something that I talk to people a lot about because I challenge them. And people just have to go look on the internet and the manufacturers of these masks and start looking into who's manufacturing these masks and what kind of elements they're using to make these masks, especially these little blue ones. And I read some reports this week, Ron, you couldn't pay me enough money to stick one of those things on my face when we look at what they do with bacteria, the fibers that are in these masks that we find out now are being released into our lungs. People got to realize, Ron, that anything made in China – and I'm not racist, but China is not our friends. They will attack us anyway and any way they can. Every possibility, anything they can do in our society, Ron, well, we're wide open, you know, and these are very evil people. The Communist Chinese Party, you know how they run the World Health Organization. We know where all that mandate's coming, how we're going to treat this. We look at what this disease is doing to our society right now, and it's nothing more than a common cold. It really isn't, or a common flu. And I've been studying numbers here for 2 weeks, Ron, and I can't find any justification in all the numbers I've looked at, StatsCan, HealthCan, I've looked at them all. And there's just absolutely no justification for what they're doing. It's absolutely draconian, and it's a crime against humanity, especially when they're making our kids wear masks in school. I want to go down there and strangle these guys.
That's a classic example of the people being indoctrinated into not questioning so-called authority.
Exactly.
And they tell them anything, and they'll just do it.
They'll do it.
Our two counties here, which this chief health officer looks after, has about 160 some thousand people in it. And the infection rate here is, I worked it out yesterday, it was 0.023% of the people who got COVID. And we don't even know that that's the number because they claim that people have had COVID that didn't. So that is a very tiny percentage. And we've had no deaths in these two counties. Yet, when I go to get a coffee or go to a store, everybody in the store is wearing a mask but me. And it's spooky. It really is spooky. It's like a weird movie.
Yeah.
You know?
Walking around in zombie land.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. You know, what really disturbs me the most, Ron, is like you said, people follow blindly, that we have been conditioned and brainwashed to not question authority, whether it be your teachers, your doctors, right from the time we were born. I remember growing up, anything the teacher said is true, anything the doctor said is true, and that was put into us since we were a child, into learning to deprogram people, learning them, getting them to learn to unlearn. Is really a tough task. It really is. And we now have something that's so controversial, because these people that are wearing these masks, they've got to be asking themselves, why are all these people demonstrating against it? And why, what am I not being told? And I say to people, we're supposed to be intelligent. Put aside all what you've been told by the government. We're supposed to be intelligent people. And I say, go look at the manufacturer's websites of all these masks and go in the store and get the names. And I did. And I looked up every one of them, Ron, and none of them state that this has any effect on stopping the COVID-SARS/19 virus. It's impossible.
Of course not.
Of course, but all I do is challenge people to do that. You know, what does that take? It takes an hour, hour and a half, and then you get another side of the story. And if that doesn't send you on a journey of discovery, I don't know what to say, because you got to ask yourself, why are they mandating this? Everybody's walking around these masks. And then and once they start asking that question, Ron, all you got to do is throw another question in the mix. Ask them to look up hypoxia, especially on small children, and you watch, their blood will boil. Because what they're doing to our children right now, these people should be taken out and hung, Ron. I don't know how else to say it, because they're killing our children. So worst thing you can do to a young child is put a mask on them, Ron. And it pisses me off, buddy. Excuse me. I'll let you talk.
This is the thing. The students I'm talking to, which are from grade 6 up,
they get it.
They get it. They understand the climate change is a fraud. COVID is a fraud. They get it, and they're quite concerned about their futures. Now, if we can get to the people in our communities and show the people that their children are being threatened. Normally, when parents understand that their children are being threatened, they get a little ticked off about that.
That should trigger.
And we can get those people to start doing the research and starting to understand what's going on, why it's going on, and that they made so many people poor in our countries now that people are going, oh, the basic income would be a great idea. No.
Yeah. Well, no, that's where they're pushing us from. Well, yeah. And they're setting society up to accept that. We see that all being played out.
Yeah. And we're not going to accept that.
Well, a lot of people will.
I was quite happy yesterday. I put a post up on Facebook, and, I've been explaining that we need to go and get a hold of our communities, because they've been implementing these agendas for a very long time. And one guy put up a post, and he says, Ron is 100% correct, because here's some links that prove that your local communities have been implementing these agendas without your knowledge or consent.
Well, of course. Look what the Premier of British Columbia did last year when he brought the Universal Declaration of Indigenous Rights and Freedoms brought into our province without any consultation with the people. The ramifications of that are mind-boggling, but we had no input on it at all, no referendums, no questions at all. All of a sudden, it's now accepted in British Columbia as law. Come on, folks.
Yeah,
it's a joke. I'm all over that, Ron. I wish people would understand what they're trying to do with that.
You know, when Bertrand, I ran into this thing from Bertrand Russell, because I've been telling people for a very long time that the education system from kindergarten, I mean, you think about it. You have a child, and the child goes to school at 5. And so if you're home with the child sitting in front of a TV set watching cartoons and that, which is already indoctrinating the child, or you take the child and you're working and you put it in a daycare center, which the children are being indoctrinated in. So by the time your child gets into kindergarten, the child's already got in its head from the TV or somewhere else. It's already in the child's head. So the teachers just carry on from there and indoctrinate the children. Mm-hmm. And, we have to put a stop to that. You know, I really got a kick out of some students I was talking to last week, or the week before. And I said, you know, if your teachers had questioned and challenged their teachers when they were students, what would your teachers not be today? And the students just looked at me and went, teachers, exactly. But those people who became teachers never questioned or challenged anything they were taught, which means you can put whatever you want in front of a teacher. They won't question it or challenge it. They'll just teach it, which is extremely dangerous. Now, Bertrand Russell, he said basically the same thing, but I love what somebody had a poster or whatever. And Bertrand Russell said, man/woman is born ignorant, which is true because your head's empty. But woman is made stupid via education because we control the education. Mm-hmm. We only teach the people what we want them to know.
Yeah,
which makes them stupid.
Well, we've allowed it to get to that point, haven't we, Ron? You know, half a chapter in the Communist Manifesto actually talks about exactly what you're talking about here, that if you can gather and control the minds of the youth, you will have that society. And that's what we see going on right now.
Yeah.
Go ahead. People got to read that book. That's one book that I have read, Ron. I read it about 6 years ago. I read it, and I pretty well remember everything that was. I'm going to actually sit down and read it again, but I do have it. This is a book that, you know, I'm not getting off subject here, but if people really want to kind of get a gist for what's going on in our society right now, Klaus Schwab wrote a book, and it is called COVID-19, The Great Reset, and I've got a copy coming this week, and I'm going to make myself sit down and read that, because we need to have that information. I'm also going to share it with some people that want to read that book.
Hey, Barry.
But I tell people, go get it. Go get it.
Barry,
for $21. Yes, Steve.
I've had that book for about 3 months now. I'm reading it on air on Tuesdays.
Oh, good. Well, it really, and I haven't had a chance to read it yet, Steve, but I've been told it's a must read. It really kind of crosses the T's and dots the I's for people, really makes them understand the depth of what we're dealing with and the people that we're dealing with and how evil these people are. Because they literally, in my world, they come from the pits of hell, but whatever you want to say or wherever you figure these people come from, they're not human beings because they don't have a soul. What they're doing to our world right now, boy, I'll tell you, karma's going to come and bite them guys big time in the future, I believe. What do you think, Ron?
Well, it's just all roads still lead back to Rome. It's that simple.
They do. You know,
it's time we, the people, get on the right road and get off the wrong road. Simple as that, you know. I try to get people to read Cloak of Green because people think that this is all based on environment when what it's really based on is business. It's the same thing as Rockefeller said in 99. Something has to take the place of government, and business seems to be the obvious entity to do it.
Yeah.
And that's what they did in the Soviet Union when Gorbachev took the Iron Curtain down and started the Global Green outfit and hooked up with Maura Strong to create the new Ten Commandments about environment. There was a guy who I saw his videos. He had went over to Russia or Soviet Union when it was communist, and then he went back after the Iron Curtain came down, and he thought it was worse because the business and the politicians joined together. So, and this is what we have now. The politicians are enriching themselves from pushing the agendas for the international companies. Right. And was it Mussolini said that or whatever? Fascism is the melding of government and business. And that's exactly what they did in Russia. And that's what exactly they're doing now. And they said back in 1950s in the Rees Commission that when the Rees Commission was checking out what the heck these tax-exempt foundations were up, Ford, Carnegie, and Rockefeller at the time, and the guy from the Ford Foundation told Norman Dodd of the Rees Commission, we've been charged with Sovietizing America. And this has been going on for a very, very long time, and hopefully people are starting to wake up to it, which I think they are, because it's getting desperate out there. But the older people, you know and I know, when you go to talk to somebody, if I talk to people I grew up with when I was a teenager, they really don't want to know anything. They've been so indoctrinated, it's ridiculous. So the young people are really the trigger. And the movie they made, America with a K, in 1987, the same year that Our Common Future came out, written by Jim McNeil of the IISD, who was with the UN and Canadian government. He was the main writer of it. The government has been working, as soon as they joined the UN, they became a partner of the UN. They joined the UN club, and they're bound by the rules and regulations of the club they joined. So no level of government in this country represents the people. They all represent the club they joined, and they're bound by the rules and regulations of the club. And we've got to break that. We've got to get out of the club. And the politicians are never going to take you out of the club. So that's up to the people.
So say we take all these players down. What are we going to replace it with, Ron? What do we need in Canada? What kind of system?
What we need in Canada?
Yeah.
And America? We need, the people did not create the government. You know, our forefathers all came here a good 200 years before there was an America or a Canada. And they came here and they built the communities and they controlled their communities. And after America and Canada were put together, mainly by lawyers and Freemasons, which leads you all the way back to Rome, then they went to our communities. They fixed up a few communities. They put in sewer lines and water lines and whatnot, and incorporated those towns and cities. And then they moved and went to other towns and cities and said, you know, you still got wells and outhouses and whatnot. Look at what we've done over here. Wouldn't you like that? This is all about the offer of benefits. Sign here at the crossroads. Mm-hmm. And they incorporated all of our communities, which means they control them, not the people. They took them away from the people. and the people have to get those communities back. There's no other ifs, ands, or buts about it, because we handed them over to the criminals.
Okay, and, in the short term, though, Ron, you know, we've had this I'm not trying to interrupt you, buddy.
But no.
We've had this conversation lots of times, and I couldn't agree with you more. I understand what we need to do. It's just right now I think we got a very, very short time frame. I say that because I see what's going on in the country right now and how fast they are bringing in their agendas. It's like they're on steroids right now. If they manage to get the population, or even 20 or 30% of this population in Canada vaccinated, we got a big problem on our hands. In the real short term, what could we do outside of getting control of our community? Because I will never argue with that. I absolutely agree with that point. It needs to be done. But that's going to take a few years to happen, Ron. What can we do right now to stop the madness? Because the madness is accelerating. This country is in shambles right now, my friend, in shambles. And it's going to get worse. You talk about Trudeau and what he's doing with the carbon tax, what that's going to do to our price of fuel. Are we going to be able to withstand this long enough to get control back at the community level? That's my question.
The best thing
we need something short term. I want your input on this, Ron, but I really feel we need something in the short term to stop this madness. What could we do in the short term?
What I keep telling people is, once you see and once you know, you can no longer be deceived. It's that simple.
Correct.
And those who do see and know need to keep talking, teaching, and shining the light. The other thing that needs to be done in the communities, because all of the independent press was basically eradicated by the end of the 70s, it's like when I was at the Miami Herald in Miami when I was working down south, and the corruption in the government was just out to lunch. Mm-hmm. And so I was keeping notes, and I went to the Miami Herald, and I sat down with the editor, and he went through my notes, and he went, "We can't print this." And I said, "But it's the truth." And the editor of the Miami Herald just looked at me and went, "Truth? We don't give a damn about the truth." and that's where we are, okay? So I'm thinking about doing an online magazine, if we can get other people to input into it, so that we can move it around. The other option is to just simply take your printer, an 11.5 sheet piece of paper, and print with the links to the proper information that the people need to understand, and just post that on all the tack boards in town, post it in the laundromats, wherever, okay? Because it is our job to educate the people in our community. Once the people in the community start to realize what the hell is going on, they're not going to be happy campers. And we have to shine the light on our local council and administration. And because silence, according to the globalists, because they write everything down. They tell us every darn thing they're up to. They're not bashful about it, because their attitude is silence is consent. So they write it all down. They show you what they're up to in the movies. They write it in the books. And if we don't challenge it, then we've consented to it.
I think they get the jollies out of that, Ron.
The problem is with the media today, it's so completely controlled that people don't go looking for stuff, and they just accept what's jammed into their heads. And we've got to break that spell. Because I was really surprised. I was sitting having a beer one night, and a guy pulled up beside me down south, And we got talking. He was a reporter from New York. So I said, well, just hang on. I'm going to go get my notes because they ain't getting printed down here. And he went through my notes, and he said, this has got to get printed. And I said, well, it ain't going to get printed down here. I said, so you take the notes, and you head back to New York, and hopefully you can get them printed. I don't know if he ever did or not. But this is our responsibility to get the actual knowledge to the people. Because if we don't do that, they're not going to get any knowledge. Period.
Well, you're correct about the censorship levels, Ron. They're right off the scale. They're full-blown communist censorship in our society now. So what we have to do, and I talked about this last time, I think we talked, and my daughters actually went out this weekend and started handing out pieces of paper to people in and around the mall, on sidewalks, anywhere she goes, she hands them a piece of paper with information about masks, our rights, our freedoms, what these masks are doing to you physically. She's listed websites on there, and she's handing it out to people. People are looking at it. Fantastic. And her Facebook this week has lit right up. She's getting friend requests. And now I sent her a little video on some of the facts from doctors about the vaccine and blah, blah, blah. And now she's growing a base. And these people are listening to her because what she pointed out was the mass sheet they have found out is correct. And people just aren't getting this information. The government alone, right, Ron? Let me say one thing first. The government's coming along and mandating masks in public places, but you never hear a word about the government about the proper use of a mask. And that is a monumental situation that we're dealing with, that they're telling us to put a mask on, but there is guidelines, and they're laid out in the Workman's Compensation Board, in Health Canada. These guidelines are laid out about the proper use of these masks, but they're completely ignoring that and telling people to put a mask on. People go into a store, they put the mask on, they come back out, they hang off the visor. I see them all over the place, people driving around with their masks on their visor, ready to go into the next store. They put it back on, and they put back on the visor, and they'll do this sometimes three or four times a day. Well, why isn't the government telling them about the levels of bacteria that are growing in that mask and you're inhaling into your lungs every time you put it back on? The more you use it, the more bacteria grows. That's absolute insanity. They should be telling people that use a mask once. We'll even provide them because we want to worry about your health, that you throw it away and you get another one. But you hear crickets about that. Add that to the equation, folks. Think about that for a minute. All you hear from the government is, we're doing this to keep you safe, we want you to be healthy, but they're absolutely ignoring the guidelines for using these masks. They should be taken out and hung for that, Ron, because what they're doing, they're creating a situation where more people are going to get sick. And, oh, well, let me think now. Those diseases are going to be respiratory. Well, doesn't that fit my agenda just perfectly? So we'll get them wearing masks. They'll get sicker. We'll ram up the numbers. Got to keep wearing masks, guys. What the heck is wrong with people, Ron? The trees are right in front of your face, folks, and why can't people see the forest? I don't know. Well, craziness.
We're just supposed to breathe oxygen.
Oh boy, the numbers, Ron. Oh, I hate that. I'm going to talk for one more second, and I'm going to let you talk because I've watched three videos now, and I've actually asked the fire station here if I can come down and do that. They're going to let me know if I can use their tester, because what happens when you put one of these masks on, your oxygen level drops from 2.25 to 2.1 is normal, is all the reports I've read. And when you put one of these masks on, the lowest level I saw it drop to was 16.1, average 17.5. So you're depleting your body of that level of oxygen, which throws your pH level right out of balance. It mucks with your immune system. It mucks with your brain. It is absolutely doing devastation to your body by reducing even that little bit of inflow of oxygen. Then add to the equation the rebreathing of the carbon monoxide that's being trapped in this mask every time you exhale. Sure, it's just a little bit, but it's a poison. When you inhale carbon monoxide, it is a poison to your body. So you're restricting your oxygen and replacing it with carbon monoxide. That is absolute insanity, folks.
Hey,
what
Barry.
Part of this don't I get? Go ahead, Steve.
1987. I was I worked at a factory about 15 miles away from my town. You know what undercoating is on RVs?
Yep.
That's what I did. I had both the respirators that I used were air fed. intergenerated. Well, for a long story short, I developed what's called a pleurisy. If anybody knows what that is, that's a mild form of pneumonia. I tell you, I wanted to die. Virtually wanted to die. That's all.
Well,
pleurisy is one of the pleurisy is one of the things that people are getting.
Well, the level of hypocrisy runs crazy in our society. You know, we could talk about anything that they touch about. They talk about climate change and carbon is our enemy. Well, what about everything else they've been doing to our environment in the last 30, 40 years or 40 or 50 years where it's really ramped up and has absolutely devastated our environment? You never hear crickets about that. And then carbon, well, isn't carbon kind of one of the building blocks? I kind of learned that in school. And yet people believe it now. It's a demon. Why can't people just go look at simple science, very simple science, and ask themselves why they're calling carbon a demon? Because it's not. I looked at 7 reports on this, Ron, and I really did some time looking into this. And I could show you the reports. So I went in and I looked at the levels of carbon monoxide or carbon dioxide in our environment right now, the parts per million. And every report I read gave me between 4 and 500 million parts per million in our environment right now, in our air. And the ultimate growing situation for carbon in our air is around 1,800 parts per million. When plant life stops growing, every report I read tells me that 180 parts per million, plant life stops growing on the planet. So why are we attacking carbon? Well, does that make any sense to anybody at all? Help me with that one, Ron, would you please?
We're attacking it's an carbon agenda. Because that's what you exhale. Okay, this is an attack on men and women and children.
I know.
They picked carbon, and carbon is a very, or CO2 is a very minimal thing in the atmosphere. But the point is that, you know, it's all a cycle. We breathe in oxygen and we exhale CO2. The plants inhale CO2 and exhale oxygen. So if you stop the carbon, you're going to kill all the plants, which means you're going to end up with a rock because ain't nothing going to live on it. It's just their usage of, I mean, here we are in Canada. We can't use coal, or we can't in Ontario. And I see they're shutting it down in Alberta in 2023. And there's a lady from Australia who's a billionaire who wants to open a open pit coal mine in Alberta. Mm-hmm. Well, where's coal going?
Going to China.
Now, we have 5 million people in Canada. China has 1.3 billion people in China.
Correct.
They're building 134 new coal plants.
Correct.
Why? Because if they stop us from using our energies, the price goes down. Just like Morris Strong said when they pulled our manufacturing out of Canada and took it to China and other low-wage places. Morris Strong said nobody can compete with us because we've got the lowest wages on the planet. It's all about business. It's not about environment. It's about business.
Corporatocracy on steroids.
And so now we can't use coal, but we're still shipping it out of here. Australia can't use coal, but they cut years ago, once Queensland was told they couldn't use coal, they cut a 20-year $60 billion deal with China to ship the coal that they were using over to China for cheap power. And China's building 134 more coal plants, and India's building a pile of them. But we can't use our own energy?
Well, Ron, you know that the air in China never moves. It stays over in China. It doesn't come over to our part of the world. So who cares what they do? I'm trying to be funny, Ron, but I'm not.
No, I understand.
I'm trying to be
that,
funny, but people, I mean, it's just hypocrisy at the highest levels I've ever seen. Our government is going to condemn us, and they're shipping it over there so they can burn it. They produce 30% of the carbon in the world right now. Oh, there's no regulation over there, none. What a joke, man! What a joke. No.
You know, it was like when I was they had a thing here in Ontario a bunch of years back, where they were saying like 6,000 people died a year from the pollution from the coal plants. And I was talking to the head of energy. This was probably 10, 12 years ago. And I says, you know, why don't you just put the stacks on the coal plants? And that stops the pollution from coming out the stacks. And he says, well, yeah, that would work. But it won't stop the CO2. There's that damn CO2 again, right? Which is a very, very minor, minor thing in the air. So, you know, when they went crazy with that Al Gore movie and all the rest of the nonsense about we have to protect the planet, the people ate it up. And, you know, we have to re-educate the people so they understand they've been had. Once they understand they've been had, they ain't going to be happy campers.
Well, you know what I find with people, Ron, they get to a point in their life. If they get to that point, then they can't turn around because they come to the realization that everything they've ever been told is a lie. And that's a really hard pill for people to swallow. But people do get to that point. If you keep bombarding them with information and challenging them to look at it, eventually they get to that point. Some will never. Some will be in their houses till they come to round them up. But some people, once they get that one little spark in their brain, that, wait a second, something is really, really messed up in Denmark, it sends them on a journey. And I've seen that with a lot of people lately. They start looking at issues and they start as a responsible person, especially, you hit on it earlier, and it's the most important thing that people have to realize, that what they're doing to our children is criminal. And if we could get apart, if we could just grab CBC Airwaves for 2 hours and lay it out to Canada exactly what they're doing to our children by restricting the amount of oxygen that's going into their body at the most critical time in their lives, the neurological, and I've read reports on this, and I also listened, Ron, to three of the most renowned child psychologists in the world and doctors. I've listened to them all say the same thing, that by restricting the flow in a child's brain at this point in their life, you are doing, without a doubt, permanent neurological damage to their body. Absolutely. Because of the development. Well, Ron, if we could just grab the airwaves for 2 hours and get that across to every parent in Canada that's being duped, you'd see a cry from coast to coast. That's what we need to do, but we can't get the airwaves, so we've got to do it, Ron. I keep reiterating that we got to do it with flyers, Ron.
It's person no different.
Get out there and hand them out.
Yeah, it's no different than what they did with the climate nonsense. There are thousands upon thousands of scientists out there who 100% say this is an entire fraud. But they don't get any airtime.
Of course.
And it's the same thing with this COVID thing. You've got all kinds of doctors and specialists and people out there who are calling this out left, right, and center. But that message isn't getting to the people because the media isn't going to let it get to the people. And, you know, that's why we need to start flyering our neighborhoods.
Yeah.
So that the people can sit down in their homes and go, wait a minute here.
Yeah.
All right. And then those people, because people live in fear, you know it and I know it, mm-hmm. right? People have to lose the fear. But they don't even have to really lose the fear. They just have to get behind the people that aren't fearful. And support them, and then we can get a hold of our communities, because once the people understand that their children's future is going nowhere, mm-hmm. Then the parents will get uppity. You know, you're hurting my child
intentionally,
and that will wake them up, and that will get them doing their research. And that will get them standing up.
Well,
and then they will see. Once you get you could go and put out 100 flyers, and 99 of them don't even look at it, but one does.
Bingo.
Okay. Now that one that's in the neighborhood is now going to get on their neighbors. And once it gets going, it'll just snowball. Right? Well, but we have to get it started.
And I'm gonna make a shout out to people today that, you know, what we're talking about right now is I think one of the best things that we could possibly do. Everybody's looking for answers, how we can get people informed. We know we're being censored left, right, and center. We're in full-blown censorship. So we got to go back to the old days where information was passed hand-to-hand on a piece of paper. And like Ron said, you know, if 99 out of 100 don't look at it, so be it. But I think you'd probably, my daughter right now is an example. She is sparking interest. And like you said, Ron, when people actually start to realize that they're being harmed intentionally, especially intentionally being harmed, it triggers a reaction in them. And that, I think, right now is one of the most powerful tools that we can use to get information around. So, folks, it's very simple. Another thing you want to do, folks, if you're listening, take a list of everything criminal that's done by the government. Put it on a piece of paper because people have such a short-term memory. But in Canada, you know, and I know, Ron, there's probably 10 things right now that Justin Trudeau should be in jail for. But you know, we hear crickets from the media. It's brushed under the rug and it's forgotten. Canadians have a very short memory because they're dealing with the next issue. You know, we're being destroyed, blah, blah. So what you do is you put it on a piece of paper and you remind them, you jog them, and it has an effect on them. Ron, go ahead. Right.
Once people get the information and they go look it up and they realize that this is all wrong, and then once they realize that their community council is implementing this stuff without their knowledge, without their consent, those people will get angry because the local council is actually working to harm your children. Mm-hmm. And therefore, we got to get a hold of these councils so we can put our foot down and say no. And I think, you know, we don't need that many people. But I do believe that once we get going, you know, and I know, Barry, you could walk down the street and knock on 50 or 100 doors. And how many of them people that you talk to actually have a clue what's going on?
Right.
Not many, if any. So it's our job to get them educated so they go and educate their friends and family as to what's going on.
Exactly.
And that will rise rather quickly.
Because, well, we got to do that right now, Ron. We do.
Yeah, like because said, the people see that, you know, the middle class is getting pretty much wiped out and the poverty level's rising and we're the richest nation in the world. Why are we in poverty? Makes no sense whatsoever.
And that will send them on a journey of discovery, Ron. And it does that to a lot of people when they take that first thought into their brain that something is really, really wrong here. They are compelled, especially when it affects the future of their children, the health of their children, they're compelled to go on that journey. Yeah. So I'm going to say it one more time. Print it up, folks. Walk around your town and hand out information to people on a piece of paper. Like Ron said, if we only reach a few of them, the repercussions and the domino effect, I believe, will get us on the right path. Go ahead, Ron. We only got about a minute left, my friend, so I'm going to have to let you go in a minute. Hours always go quick with you, Ron, when I'm talking with you, and I really appreciate you coming in today. I love your input and your thought line. Tell people where they can find you, and then we're going to have to shut her down again for another couple of weeks, and I'll have you back. Go ahead.
Well, I have a blog called CanadianTruths.wordpress.com. I haven't posted in there for a while, but as far as this COVID goes, if you go to CanadianTruths.wordpress.com and put in H1N1, you will get a real eye-opener because it's based on the same situation as COVID. And once you read what they put in there, you're not going to be a happy camper. Or you can go to my Facebook, which is Ron Stephens, STPHENS. Hopefully I don't take it down right away. But no, I want to thank you very much, Barry, for having me on today. It was a real pleasure. And I want to, you know, we always got to thank Steve, right? because he does all the hard work behind it and make sure your show's on the air and that. So, you know, I miss BC, lived there for a while. But it's people tell me it's just as crazy as it is here in Ontario now. So
Well, it stands for basic communism now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Same thing across the country, Ron. And yeah. You do a radio show. Tell people about that, Ron.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I do a radio show Sundays from noon till 2 on Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And, you know, just trying to do what Barry's trying to do, wake the people up so we can get this moving. So.
Okay, Ron. Well, thanks for joining me again, bud. And I'm going to have to let you go. Folks, I'll be back in 4 minutes with Doug Force. So hang around.
You have yourself a great week.
Yeah, thanks again, Ron.
Okay, you take care.
Okay, bye for now. Okay, I'll be back in 4 minutes, folks.
We don't talk anymore. We don't talk anymore. We don't talk anymore like we used to do. We don't love anymore. What was all of it for? We don't talk anymore like we used to do. I just said you found the one you've been looking for. Wish I would've known that was me.
www.peoplesinternetradio.com Seeking solutions.
Well, welcome back to the second hour, folks, and thanks again for Ron coming in. And like I said, I always enjoy talking with the man. Originally, I had a British Bobby, a retired British Bobby, coming in today. He's a whistleblower. He was going to elaborate on a video done by the Nurses Union through a spokesman this week in front of the hospital in Edmonton. And the video has gone viral. And, of course, CBC did a hit piece on it, and he was going to report on that today. But because of some things that have been said to him in the last couple of days, he wants to wait a week or two to get back on. So my apologies. But, you know, on short notice, I thought about who can I pull in that I love talking to on short notice. And he was gracious enough to oblige me today. Welcome to the show, Doug Force. Always great to have you in, my friend. And we talked for a minute before we went on air here about where we want to go with this for the first 15 minutes. So I'll let you elaborate on that. And like I said, welcome to the show, Doug.
Well, thank you very much, Barry. And it's always fun to do your shows. I don't know. This has been number 12 or 13 now in the last year or so. And it's always exciting. I love your audience. They're just a great bunch of people. they actually know what we're talking about when we talk about it. And I guess you wanted me to elaborate on what this government is and what it isn't. Well, we know what it isn't. It isn't for the people, by the people. That's for darn sure. It is a de facto government, or an illegal and unlawful government. And how do we know that? Because of the historical documentations that put that government into place. Now, without getting too deeply into this, because it would take about 2, possibly 3 hours to fully explain it, Barry, we just have to go look at the one from 1982 called the Canada Act and what that actually did and didn't do. The Canada Act didn't create a de jure government. And how do we know this? Because the Canada Act is made up of two specific things, the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, and the, it's a photocopy of the British North American Act that they call the Constitution Act. And it's kind of funny because it said that the proclamation that would have ratified this Constitution Act, or whatever they want to call it, into supreme law, not supreme law of the land, not supreme law of the sea, but this fictitious supreme law, said subject to Section 59 being repealed. Well, Section 59 has never been repealed. And hence the second proclamation, which the first proclamation says very clearly, a second proclamation will be written by the Governor General under the Great Seal of Canada, allowing the Canada Act to become supreme law. Well, guess what? Never happened. So not only are they de facto unlawful, but now they're also de facto illegal. and it really doesn't get any plainer or simpler than that.
Okay, well, that will send people in a certain direction for sure, Doug, because I know myself, you know, I've said it many times on shows, that I really have a hard time with that kind of legal mumbo-jumbo, I'll call it. But I'm trying really hard to understand it all, and maybe one day it'll sink in. But I know you also, getting away from that subject, you also wanted to talk about common law and some of the things that are going on with that amongst the groups right now in Canada.
Well, I've been noticing a lot of, because I have to administer the Facebook page for the Myth is Canada and I'm working with other groups, Freedom Forum, where I help them administer their pages, and a number of other groups on Facebook. So it keeps me busy as well. And there's all these postings coming up now with people, you know, blathering about common law this and common law that. And I thought we would take a few minutes today and give some clarity as to what really common law is. And there was a comment, and Christopher James from A Warrior Calls, a great guy. I love his work in defining common law and trespass, et cetera, et cetera. But he made a comment last night at the rally in Calgary as he was closing out his live stream. And he said, common law hasn't been here in Canada in over 200 years. We haven't had a common law court. And that's not true. Not true even a little bit. The common law courts were in Canada up until 1931. We had criminal law, which is common law. And all the criminal courts in Canada up until 1931 were common law courts. So let's give this a better definition. So what is common law specifically? Common law is criminal law. It is not tort. It is not equity. It is not maritime. It is not admiralty. It is not civil law. It is criminal law. So let's give an example of what that means, Barry. So where did it come from? It came from Anglo-Saxons. So the Anglo-Saxons had common law. That was the foundation of common law back about 1,200 years ago, or even back a little bit further than that. And so what they would do is that if let's say that I stole your horse, okay, and I had use of that horse for a time, and then I got caught on your horse, and you proved to be your horse in a court of common law, I was executed. The penalty for that was death. Now, if I stole your cow, the penalty, if I got caught, was death. If I stole your pig, the same thing. The penalty was death. It's criminal law. Whatever it was. And let's say, for example, that my wagon broke loose, rolled down a hill, and killed your cow. Okay? Purely by accident. In a common law court, I would be put to death if I was the wagon owner because I killed your property. Okay? Didn't steal it, but I killed it, but it was by accident. So they didn't have a way in common law to create equity. Okay. So today, everybody's saying, well, common law is the cure for everything. We can cure this. We can cure that. The problem is that that's not true. In a common law court, that is a criminal court. When here in Canada, up until 1931 on the Statute of Westminster, we had the criminal law. Today, we have criminal code. What is criminal code? Well, criminal code is maritime jurisdiction. Criminal law, L-A-W, is common law jurisdiction. And so the courts in Canada went to court. For example, I stole your car. The police caught me. I went into a common law court in 1929, and I stood trial in a common law court. Okay? But over the years, various centuries, English common law became blended so that you wouldn't be killing everybody for everything. Okay? So in 1066, when good old King William the Conqueror came over and overthrew England, remember that? The Battle of Hastings, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, he also brought law with him. So over time, Anglo-Saxon common law was blended with Roman civil law. And how do we know this? People say, well, how do you know that, Doug? How do you know that that's the case? Well, because we know this because in 1225, Magna Carta was ratified by the Pope and the Vatican, and it actually became law on the books in England, not the 1215 Magna Carta. It's never been ratified, and it was never law on the books in England. And how do we know this? Because they needed one change to happen to the Magna Carta. So the original Magna Carta, written in Old English, by the way, you can't find an English translation for the 1215 Magna Carta, a modern English translation. They don't keep those. The only ones that they have and that people are touting around, oh, look at all this 1215 Magna Carta says this, and this. Actually, they're touting around the translation in modern English of the 1225 Magna Carta. Huh. How do we know this? Because it's very simple. The 1215 Magna Carta had said free man, two words. Free men, two words. Right? 1225 Magna Carta that the Pope ratified made the change to freeman, one word. Freeman and free man, one word. Okay? Well, what's the difference? In Roman civil law, a freeman is a slave with rights and privileges. Ah, so there's the blending. So that's how they took it. Anglo-Saxon common law, blended it with a little bit of Roman civil law, and now we have King's common law. As the centuries passed on and went by, they also added little things like tort and equity, okay, to the blending of the courts. And over time, we got English common law, which was the common law that was used here in Canada under the Dominion of Canada. And that made it so all your criminal courts were still common law courts, but they also had equity courts. We also had tort court, so that if you wronged me, let's say that you ran into my car, and then we couldn't agree on a payment to get it fixed, well, I could take and sue you in tort court. Okay, I could put a tort against you, and I would sue you. Right, and then we would have remedy. Okay, it's all about finding remedy. And so people today think that the end-all and be-all with common law is just common law. And I ask people, I say, so what jurisdiction of common law are you talking about? Are you talking about Anglo-Saxon common law, which is pure criminal law? Or are you talking about King's common law, which is a blending of Anglo-Saxon common law and Roman civil law? Or are you talking about English common law, which is the blending of tort, equity, Roman civil law, Anglo-Saxon common law, maritime, admiralty, all kind of blended together? And you can see that in also the fourth jurisdiction, which is constitutional common law in the United States. And so when you look at this, and so people are, they don't really understand what common law is what I'm trying to say here. And the reality is, it's in order to have common law, you can have land under your feet. Dominion of Canada had land under its feet. How do we know this? Because the British Empire had control of all of land here in Canada, hence land under their feet, to institute courts for us as a united colony. And up until 1931, they did just that. After 1931, they released the land that was held in the court in Chancery to the people of Canada so that we could see to de jure government federal. But that never took place. And if we had done that, we would have common law courts today. We would have criminal law, not criminal code. So,
well, that's a lot for my old brain to take in, but it really is, Ron. Doug, I've told you many times that I kind of almost have a mental block, and I don't know why that is when I try and comprehend that. So I'm glad I get guys like you in to try and explain it to people that are listening. And maybe people out there have a better understanding at all. I'm going to have to look at this 3 or 4 times to take it all in. You know, in the same mouthful, if somebody wanted to call in and talk to Doug, I'll give you a phone number. It's 1-269-591-7828. Or you can call Steve Roberts on Skype, and we'll probably take a call in the next 45 minutes if you feel like doing so. Any of your listeners listening in, Doug?
That's the wrong number.
That's the wrong. Okay, can you give me the right number then, please?
Yes, Steve? I'll type it in.
Well, you can just say it real
quick. Oh, it's 269-409-1950.
Okay, I was going off your Skype.
I know it. That was my old number. Sorry.
Okay. Anyways, if you feel like it, call in. Anyways, let's go forward, Doug. Boy, I'll tell you, there's some stuff happening in Canada here in the last couple of weeks that have really gathered some attention, especially the reports on Trudeau's involvement with the Chinese military. You want to talk about that for a minute?
But you got to understand something. There's a lot of misinformation going on out there about the Chinese military doing this and the Chinese military doing that. Mm-hmm. And the Chinese military has been training here in Canada for 20 plus years. And they come to Canada because they get cold weather training, something they can't get in China. And they made a deal a long time ago with, I think it was either the, what was his name? Paul Martin government, or the, what's the other guy, the conservative guy, the other, one of those governments anyways, long before Trudeau ever took office, to come over for cold weather training. And so, yes, you see a lot of Chinese troops, especially in the wintertime, and in Ontario and here in the West. There's some places in the West that they will come in and train at. And so now the big hype is, oh, look at Trudeau's training the Chinese troops, blah, 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 blah. And it's laughable. I'm sorry to say it is absolutely laughable. They've been doing it for years. And what it's trying to do, it's trying to get the people, all cooked up and focused on something that isn't true, so that all the energy that they have is focused on something that isn't true, so that when they actually come along with something that is true, they're going to miss the whole thing. It's going to pass them right by. Mm.
Well, then, So then there's a lot of people being duped because this is being reported around the world and carried on American networks. And yes. I think the depth of what was being exposed, I know that there's been involvement over the years. I'm well aware of that. But I believe what they're reporting on is some of the depths that are being involved right now. And, you know, whether it's controlled opposition, whether it's there to rile the people or not, the fact is a lot of people weren't aware of any of this. And just exposing it, I mean, that's got to be a good thing. Even, like you said, if it's being blown out of proportion, that it's laughable. Well, my only thought is that why would he ever have anything to do with our enemy? Why is that started in the beginning, and where did it start? If Trudeau is just ramping this up at this point, it's being exposed. Where did it all start? And you kind of pointed that out. So what's been going on here for the last 30, 40 years, Doug? I mean, we're training our enemy in our country.
Yeah, but who's to say that? Who says the Chinese are our enemy?
Where does
that come from? I mean, in the entire history of Canada, in the entire history of Canada, let's go back even to the 1700s and 1600s. When did a Chinese ever attack us? When?
Well, you don't have to attack a country to defeat it, Doug. I think we're seeing that right now in Canada, aren't we? I mean, we know that that the Chinese Communist Party is deeply, deeply involved with the World Health Organization. They're deeply involved in the United Nations. And we see all these mandates.
Barry,
I've been looking into that for quite a few years, so maybe I'm wrong, but I would be a real blockbuster to me if everything that I've looked into in the last couple, 3 years is all hogwash.
There's a lot. We've got to be very careful, Barry, especially in these times with disinformation, because the powers that be, what people call the globalists, or what I call the globalist parasites, they want you paying attention to a made-up enemy over there. So pay attention to the made-up enemy over there whilst they take over here. And it's easy to point to the Chinese and say, oh, they're the enemy. Don't look at us and what we're doing over here, because we're your friends. We're going to bring out these safe vaccines that won't kill you. They won't hurt you. They'll be fine for you. We're going to save your life, even though that, you know, this is the Wuhan virus. It came out of China, but it didn't. It actually came from these guys. It's just an extension of what do you call that? Event 201. There is no virus. It's all fake. But they won't. It came out of Wuhan, China. The Chinese are the bad guys. They're the ones that released this virus, and we're going to save you by giving you this wonderful mRNA vaccine that's going to change your DNA that we hold the patent for, and then we enslave you and your prodigy for the rest of eternity. But you don't have to pay attention to that, because we're not bad guys. The Chinese over there are, or the Russians are the bad guys, or the Iranians are the bad guys. We're the good guys. We're here to help you. And so there's a lot of disinformation getting people involved in looking in the wrong direction. It's called misdirection. And you have to understand that the Chinese want nothing to do with taking over the world. They don't. They have enough problems of their own with 1.2 billion people. They don't need to take over the world. It's the same as the Russians. The Russians are so happy that there is no more USSR anymore, and that their whole economy is now based within the borders of Russia, and that they want to create their own better world for themselves. And actually, Russia is not a bad place to live compared to North America right now. And by the way, same as in China. They don't have masking in China. They don't have social distancing in China. They don't have lockdowns in China. They don't have this. And the same in Russia. No lockdowns, no social distancing, no nothing. Why? Because these countries know that it's a fraud, that there is no virus. They play the lip service. Sure they do. Russia came out with a vaccine. Russia was the first country in the world to come out with a vaccine for COVID-19, literally 60 days after COVID-19 hit. Wow. Talk about the amazing Russia.
Interesting thoughts, Doug. Interesting thoughts.
It's 100% safe, by the way. The Russian vaccine is 100% safe. It won't change your DNA, and it will protect you from COVID-19, the fictitious virus. 100% protect you from. 100% protect you from.
Where did that information come from?
What do you mean?
Just wondering. Well, that information, what you just said there, where did that information come from? Or are you being funny?
Being funny.
Because you got to be funny at this point. I mean, this is absolute lunacy.
The Russian backseat sailing.
I didn't know if you were serious or being funny, Doug, for a second. Excuse me.
it's saline solution for a virus that doesn't exist. But why did the Russians create the vaccine? Because they're playing the lip service for the Western world. Oh, we're going to have COVID passes and you can't fly anywhere without being vaccinated. And by the way, the vaccine the Russians created is so good that Israel adopted it and banned all the Western vaccines from Israel. The only vaccine that was being distributed in Israel is the Russian vaccine, period. They will not take Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, AstraZeneca, or any of the other Western vaccines, only the Russian vaccine. And they came out and said that about a week ago.
Well, look at the reports from Pfizer. They stopped doing tests, have they not, Doug? Is that true or is that incorrect? Because what I've seen, they're seeing lots of deaths already. Is that true or not?
You're right. They stopped testing it because they're rolling it out and they're going to test it on us.
Well, we know that. And people are going to roll up their sleeve.
Yep.
What does it take to get through to them? I mean, never in history has a vaccine been rolled out this quick. Like you said, they're putting stuff in this that's never been put in the human body. And if people did a little research, they'd find out about Bill Gates' involvement in this, blah, blah, blah. It's the revolving door. But unfortunately, they don't do that kind of research. And, you know, what your thoughts on China, I appreciate your opinion. I don't share a lot of those opinions right to the core, but it's always great hearing your opinion. Doug, go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, there's a real simple question that people can ask their doctors, their nurses, their politicians, and it's just one question. So the name of the COVID-19 virus is called SARS-CoV-2. Now, SARS-CoV-2 has yet to be isolated by any virology lab or any vaccine virology lab on planet Earth. To this day, they have yet to isolate the virus. Now, a SARS virus, on average, takes 90 days to isolate. 90 days. Okay? Takes 90 days to isolate it. And let's see, how many months have we been doing this? March, April, May, June, July, August, September, October, November, December. Woo, 10 months. 10 months. So not in three times the amount of time necessary to isolate a SARS virus have they yet to isolate. So what vaccine are you going to be vaccinated for? As a matter of fact, the vaccine company said, we have yet to isolate SARS-CoV-2. So the vaccines that we will be distributing will only help with symptoms. If you have a scratchy throat, or you have a sniffle, or you have, wait a minute, aren't those the symptoms of a common cold? Oh, so we're being vaccinated now for the common cold symptoms, because they certainly can't vaccinate you for a virus that doesn't exist, ladies and gentlemen.
Try to get that through to the sheeple, Doug. Yep. Try and get that through their brains. That's one of the most monumental points that people can take into their heads. But my understanding was that they've been trying to isolate this for years and they haven't been able to do it, Doug. Well, am I correct in saying that? I thought that's what I read in reports, that they've been trying for years to isolate this and they haven't yet been able to do it. Well, and that was coming from the World Health Organization, the CDC, and Health Canada reports I read.
Here's the funny thing.
Clarify that for me.
SARS-CoV-1 was the SARS virus that came out about 2012. SARS-CoV-1, about 8 years
ago. Right.
And Judy Mikovits, who's a wonderful virologist and immunologist, this woman is just freaking amazing. She's so famous. She was the one that isolated the AIDS virus. This is how cool this woman is. Absolutely, you listen to this woman speak, and she's amazing. So she explained that SARS-CoV-1 came out 8 years ago. So in order for SARS-CoV-2 to occur in nature, in a natural occurring situation, which means that SARS-CoV-1 mutated in nature to SARS-CoV-2, would take 800 years. 800 years, not 8 years. So, yeah, no kidding. They can't isolate a SARS-CoV-2 virus. Why? Because it does not exist. It is in nature, it's impossible. But even in a lab, if it actually existed in a lab, you would think that they would come out and say, well, we found it in the dead bodies, because look, back in May and June of this year, The number one virology lab in the entire world is in Switzerland. They are the top lab of the world. They took 3,000 cadaver samples out of Italy, okay, that they tested for COVID-19. Now, these cadavers all died of COVID-19. Out of 3,000 samples, guess how many proved SARS-CoV-2? None. Zero. Not one. Well, if you don't think that was big enough, okay, great. There's a lab in Stanford University in the United States, in California. And you think, ooh, California, they're going to find it. Yeah, absolutely. If this was lab created, they would find it in the samples. 18,000 samples in Stanford University's virology lab. 18,000. Not 3,000, but six times 3,000. Of 18,000 samples testing for SARS-CoV-2, looking to identify that virus, zero. Not one. Not one.
Wow. Mm. So that'd be interesting to look at those reports. So what kind of a test are they using? They're not using the PCR test, obviously.
No. What they do is that they have to isolate the virus. So what do they take? They take the soup and they start to break the soup down. So they call it the soup. So there's bits and pieces of virus in the soup. So they go through the soup and they go, okay, that bit is for that virus. Throw that piece away. That bit is for this virus. Throw that away. Oh, that's a piece of DNA from the human body. Throw that away. Oh, this is a piece of RNA from a bacteria that was left over. Throw that away. And what they do is they go through the soup. They slowly isolate it down to what's left, okay? And every time they do that, try to isolate SARS-CoV-2, they wind up with an empty bowl, because they're able to identify all of the other stuff within that bowl. It's the stuff that they can't identify that they're looking for, okay, in that soup. And it literally is tens of thousands of particles and, you know, little pieces of DNA, little pieces of RNA, bits and pieces within this soup. And they try to isolate it from that. And so far, and they believe that they're not going to be able to, because the virology labs have now kind of shrugged their shoulders and go, it doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. If it was lab created, by the way, and released into the population, you would think that every virology lab that ever tested somebody who died of COVID-19 would find the virus because it was lab created. There it is. Ooh, we found it. There it is. But they haven't. They have yet to isolate. Wow. So it tells you one thing. This is event 201. Ongoing. It's a false flag event.
Right. I'm fully aware of that.
They're conning us. There is no virus. I can't stress that enough. There is no virus known as SARS-CoV-2. Now, there are all kinds of billions of viruses out there. And guess what, Barry? Guess what? Bill Gates came out on March the 1st, right, of this year, and he said, ladies and gentlemen, I might be a eugenicist, but I'm here to save the world population with a new vaccine because 7.8 million people no longer have an immune system. And I'm here to save it, even though I'm a card-carrying eugenicist. And I want to depopulate the planet. At my TED Talks, I've said it many times. I need to depopulate the planet. I was lying then. I'm telling the truth now. I'm here to save your life. Take my mRNA vaccine, and you will be saved because you don't have an immune system.
I've had a change of heart, man. And then, of course, the Pope came out this week and stated to his followers that if they didn't take the vaccine, they weren't going to heaven. Oh, boy. Did you hear that, Doug? Right out of his mouth. Don't take the vaccine, you're not going to heaven.
The Pope's a Satanist anyways. He's a black Pope. And
I know that. We can talk about it for hours.
His heaven is Lucifer. Anyway, I try not to get into religion too much, Barry, because that's a big long radio show.
Well, it is, Doug, but it ties into what's going on right now in lots of different ways. So it don't hurt to touch on a subject, especially when it's something as monumental that like that being said by the Pope, and he still has, unfortunately, millions of followers that are being deceived. And we know all about the Jesuits and when they took over the Catholic Church. We know who runs the Catholic Church. We don't have time to get into that one today, but if we did, it would take a couple hours to pull back the layers of what we see. You know, it's unbelievable the history of the Pope I mean, that alone would take a half an hour to talk about. Go ahead.
I was going to say, that's an onion that would be forever trying to peel, my friend. Oh, my
well,
God.
Well, yeah. Well, I know, and it would bring a lot of tears to your eyes. What a good assimilation that is. Doug, I'm going to have to remember that one, because when you do, you're going to be crying.
Oh, God. But, yeah.
Oh, no, man.
So we got to answer the question, Barry. The question: why would they do this? Why would they put a fake virus out there? Why would they con us into believing that we need to take a vaccine for a fake virus? Why? What's all this really about? Mm-hmm. And
great question.
Well, and what's it really about? Well, we have to let's pull back the curtain. It's about the bankers. It's about the system of control through banking, through money. It's all about control through money. Oh, and Mr. Klaus Schwab said it so nicely. The Great Reset. Remember that one? Great Reset. Ooh, what does that mean? Well, we're going to reset the currency in our favor against you. And he made it very clear. You will own nothing and you will be happy. Well, if we own nothing, who owns everything? Oh, Mr. Klaus Schwab and his buddies own everything. And we have to rent it back from him.
What a great idea, man. Why didn't I think of that, Doug?
Let's go back. Let's go back to Genesis chapter 1, verse 26. Let's go back there. Let's see what chapter 1, verse 26 of Genesis says. It says, and God created man, and God created him in his own image. And God gave man dominion over the earth, all that creepeth across its surface, all that flieth in its skies, and all that swimmeth in its oceans. It doesn't say, and God created Klaus Schwab and his image to take over and give Klaus Schwab dominion of the earth so that he can control man. No, it does not.
We're talking Adolf Hitler in the Second World War, but why don't we look into Klaus Schwab's background, folks? And you will find out exactly what Doug is talking about right now, to the T. Or Christa Freeland. I mean, let's look at her grandfather. A lot of people don't know. And I found out this is true, and correct me if I'm wrong, but her grandfather was the head of propaganda for Hitler in the Second World War. I looked into that, and I believe that's true. Is it no? Is that not true?
Not for Hitler, for Banderas, because he was in Ukraine. Don't forget, Banderas was the big Nazi for Hitler in the Ukraine. And Christa Freeland's grandfather worked with Banderas propaganda.
Right. Yes. Basically, he was working for Hitler in a roundabout way.
Well, correct? In a roundabout way. He was working for Banderas.
Anyways, regardless, you got to look at the background of these people and what they've been indoctrinated in all their life. And now she's what? Deputy Prime Minister and head of finance in Canada? What a joke.
Don't forget also that she is a Rhodes Scholar. She's a journalist. She went to journalism school and became a Rhodes Scholar. You know what a Rhodes Scholar does, right? Okay, London LSE, London Economics School. You know who Rhodes was? Cecil Rhodes. Remember Cecil Rhodes? He created the Rhodes Scholarship. He was a eugenicist. He was all about depopulating the planet. He followed Malthus. Was it John Malthus or Robert Malthus? I could never get that correct. But he's a Malthusian. And she is a card-carrying Malthusian, following Malthus's writings. And Malthus's writings have been proven 100% incorrect in the way that he talked about how the planet was becoming overpopulated exponentially, blah, blah, blah. And all his math was wrong. 100% incorrect. Mm. And yet, Christa Freeland is a card-carrying Malthusian.
Hmm.
She is a eugenicist. Right along with Bill and Melinda Gates, along with George Soros, along with, well...
blah, 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 blah. The whole big party.
You can't
party.
Include Justin Trudeau in that because he's just a fucking pimple on the world.
Oh, watch language. Doug, no swearing, buddy, please.
Sorry, I forgot.
Okay, bleep, bleep. One strike. I know when you talk about Justin Turdhead, it's very difficult to not express our feelings. But anyways, let's go forward. Yeah. Anyway, what exactly is a Malthusianist? It's a person that follows his writings, correct? And
his last name is Malthus. And I can't remember whether it's Robert Malthus or John Malthus. It's one or the other. And he was back in the 1800s, and he was a big guy about depopulating the planet. He was a eugenicist. And he used these mathematical equations to show that the population of the planet was going to explode with human beings and blah, 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 blah. And every single one of his mathematical equations turned out to be incorrect.
Right.
Incorrect. Just wrong-headed mathematics. But because of the Fabian Society back then, don't forget the Fabian Society, they're the big collectivists. They were the big boys back then, the collectivists. H.G. Wells was part of that. A number of other big-name people were part of the Fabian Society. And Malthus was part of the Fabian Society. And so all of these guys tied together, collectivists want to control the world, but they want a population of slaves that they can control. So they need to be eugenicists in order to depopulate the planet down to a point where they have enough slaves for themselves, and that's it. And then the rest of the world is open to their enjoyment. Mm. Okay, they believe that the human is a plague on the planet. Okay, that human beings are a plague on the planet, and that only human beings of their stature are not part of that plague because they're the intellectuals who will control all of this. And it's like, oh my God, you collectivist knuckleheads. You know, oh, we need to, and they want to control absolutely every single thing you do, but they can't seem to even balance their own checkbooks. Well, go figure. Wow, their lives are spiraling out of control, but they want to control your life.
Yeah, explain that one to people. You know, unfortunately, most people that we talk to, Doug, have never gone down any of these rabbit holes. So if you try to explain that to them, you're going to lose them right away. So I find now I really have to kind of keep it simple with people because we're dealing with, seems like, simple minds. It really does. You know, I have found in conversations that if I get off a level that they can't even begin to relate to, that you'll lose people right away. So I know you know a lot about this, and to get that through to people's brains would be a monumental task. But it's great having you on explain this. I kind of understand a lot of it, but like I said, most people, we'd lose them in the first couple sentences, but it's always good to hear. What else did you want to talk about today, buddy? There's all kinds of things I wanted to talk about. What do you want to talk about?
Well, no, and I just wanted to finalize this because at the end of the day, Barry, yes, we might use – stuff that people might have the first rub under trying to understand it. But if we try to dumb it down, and Fred, a friend of mine calls it Fred Flintstoning this information, what right. you're doing is you're losing about two-thirds of the audience because you don't want to dumb it down. You want to have people take this information, write the word Malthus down, go look it up, understand what the word eugenics means by going and looking it up. And you're basically having people in your audience here go out and do their own research, which is so important because then it becomes solidified in their mind as to what we are talking about. Right. And we don't have to solidify it for them, but by them carrying on with their own research, just by doing a couple of Google searches and then seeing what, okay, click, click, click. Now it doesn't go out of the mind. It's there. It's locked. Locked and loaded.
Yeah. Well, we could say that about just about anything we're dealing with in today's world, couldn't we, Doug? I mean, if people that are pro-vaccines go out on the internet and look up all the vaccines available on the market last year, you'll find a list and you'll find every ingredient in every vaccine. And then you can take those vaccine ingredients and cross-reference them on your computer. And when you start reading some of the effects these things have on the human body, there isn't a person with any kind of IQ that will put a vaccine in their body. But unfortunately, they don't have the time to do that. That is sad. It really is. We're supposed to be intelligent people. We're supposed to question everything. Go ahead.
Barry, I was going to say, and there are some vaccines that are very good that actually do work, that don't contain a lot of that, like the thermosol and stuff like that. For example, I was over in West Africa years ago now. We had a mining operation over in Cote d'Ivoire. And the number one killer of people over there, especially if you were from the Western world, was river sickness. And if you didn't take the vaccine before you went, the likelihood of you catching river sickness was extremely high. because because the rivers are everywhere, right? And the heat and the humidity, so the viruses or the illnesses would be in the air, literally in the air around the rivers, and you could catch it that way. It was that simple. But once you caught it, it killed you. It killed you dead. You had no immune against it. It just wiped you out. And usually within 10 to 14 days, you were dead. Hmm. And so that vaccine actually saved lives. I had a friend of mine whose business partner said, oh, I've got to run down. And he was going to Senegal. I've got to get to Senegal. I don't have time to take the vaccine. My doctor couldn't see me for 3 days, blah, blah, blah. And he jumped on a plane. He went to Senegal. He was there a week. He caught the river sickness, and checked into the hospital there, and he died 14 days later. He was dead. And all because he wouldn't take the time to take the vaccine. And that would have saved his life. How amazing is that? So there are some vaccines that are very good for you. And another one is tetanus. The tetanus shot that you'll get when you cut yourself on rusty steel, instead of getting lockjaw, they give you a tetanus shot so that you don't get lockjaw and die, which is also a life-saving vaccine. And so there are some good ones. I can't name off any others because I don't really know. I'm not much of an expert on this stuff. But so I'm not anti-vax, but I'm not pro-vax in the sense that I believe that everybody needs to be vaccinated for everything. I believe that there's vaccines that are there that are available for people to save their lives. And then there are other vaccines that are there only to increase the balance sheet of the company that's creating.
Well, it's definitely a loaded conversation, and I have very strong thoughts about vaccines because I've looked at them over the years. And whether there is good ones out there or not, I won't say there isn't, but the ones that I have looked over the years and the effects on society, what we've done in the last 50, 60 years is we tried to replace the human immune system with a lot of vaccines. You know, when I went to school, Doug, and you went to school, we all were exposed to measles, chickenpox, mumps. I remember in public school as a child, there wasn't a childhood disease that wasn't going around our schools at one point. There wasn't anybody that didn't get it. We all got it. We went home, stayed home for a couple of days. We came back to school. And what that did, it built our immune systems. It built a very, very strong immune system. Our immune systems are designed to work that way because they create antibodies to that sickness, and you'll never get it again in your life. And that can be said about measles or chickenpox, et cetera, et cetera. Once you've had it, you never get it again, because you build those natural immunities. And what we've done with vaccines is we replace those natural immunities. Now, henceforth, we see a major rise in autoimmune diseases. The scale of sicknesses. What has happened to me, in my opinion, the vaccine industry was completely turned around here. And what they're doing now with it is nothing short of criminal. And I say that because I've studied for years. And, we can always get a pushback. Where are you getting that information from? Where are you getting these studies from? Well, I've really tried to make a point of cross-referencing and vetting my studies. And what I see is an incredible rise in diseases like autism in North America. I see that we are the most vaccinated people in the world, bar none. And yet we are now the sickest people in the world, Doug, and that's a fact. We lead the world in all cognitive disorders. We're number two, I think it is now, I just looked at the numbers, number two in cancer. We're number one in Alzheimer's, and it's going off the scales right now. Well, what causes Alzheimer's? Well, if you take the brain of a person that died from Alzheimer's and you dissect it, you'll find incredible levels of aluminum in the brain. They've done this to many people that have died from Alzheimer's. Yeah. And yet those ingredients are in our vaccines. So it's a major question. I say to myself, one of the biggest things that sticks in my brain about the whole vaccine controversy is that the vaccine industries will come out. Every vaccine that comes on the market, they'll tell them they're safe and effective. There's nothing to worry about. Yet we have the Vaccine Industry Compensation Board in the States. It's paid out $6.5 billion in settlements since 2008. And every one of those settlements comes with a gag order. Well, we got to ask ourselves what's going on there and why are they gagging these people from talking about the harm has come to their body. To me, it's just kind of like a giant credit card. They're paying off people because they've been damaged. It's the price of doing business. Then we look at the vaccine industry and we see them making hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars every year. A lot of questions to be asked about it, Doug. Go ahead.
No, I agree with you. Like I say, Barry, I'm not a pro-vaxxer, but I'm not an anti-vaxxer either, because I know specifically that there are some vaccines that do save lives and have been saving lives for many years. I honestly don't know enough about it. I know what you've said, and I've seen the statistics here in North America and in Europe of people getting vaccinated for measles. We used to have measles parties as kids growing up.
Well, of course.
Joe's kid down the street got the measles. They'd send all the kids from the neighborhood over to Joe's kid.
Then we get off school for 3 or 4 days, man. We had to figure it out.
Exactly. Yeah, same with chicken pox. The same thing. We have to have chicken pox parties.
Well, hey, Doug, honestly, when I was a kid, I had every possible disease that was going around when we were children. I'm sure I had it. I mean, I don't think you can name one that I haven't had in my lifetime, but I've never had a reoccurrence. And that's because your body builds up natural immunes to that virus, and you will never experience it again in your lifetime. But we have replaced that. And to me, we're playing with nature. Our bodies were made the way they are. They're a miracle. They are absolutely a miracle that I honestly believe that if our cells are communicating in our body, which the cells, the telecommunication has been broken down by many mechanisms over the years, that if our cells are communicating properly in the human body, there isn't nothing that the body can't deal with. When we talk about the endocannabinoid signaling system in the body, Doug, that's a miracle. It's unbelievable how this system works. We have some of the top doctors in the world who have been studying this for 15, 18 years of their lives, people that have degrees up their arms and down their legs, and they still can't figure out the system. But the World Health Organization, I don't know if you know this, Doug, but in 2010, they made a statement that the discovery of the endocannabinoid signaling system in the human body is the greatest discovery in medical history. That was quashed and never reported on after that. But if you look it up, I'm telling you the truth. Then they made that statement. 13% of the universities in the States are only touching on it now. They're only starting to touch on this. Yet we see mountains and mountains of information coming forward about the effects of CBDs and CBLs. The miracles we hear are just unbelievable, what this is doing to our body. What we've done is taken that out of society and replaced it with chemicals and prescription drugs. We look at drug interaction now, and it is what the number three killer, Doug, of people in North America is drug interaction. Well, who's the criminals, Doug? Who's the criminals? Come on, folks. What part of that don't I understand? Go ahead. I look at all these equations, and it doesn't make any sense.
It does not. And it gets it. The worst part of this is that people are being conned, and they're actually believing this stuff. They actually believe that, that the only way that we're going to be saved is if Bill Gates saves us. I'm sorry, folks, but, those that are just tuning into this for the first time, wake the heck up, God almighty.
Take that face diaper off. Yeah, who's George Soros? Who's George Soros? Yeah, right. Go look into him for an hour, folks, and boy, I'll tell you, there's a man that really does not belong to be on this earth right now, but he still is, unfortunately. When's that guy gonna pass on? Isn't he something like 95 or 96 now or something?
But don't forget that David Rockefeller just died a couple of years ago at 106.
Yeah, they've got it all figured out, man. They're drinking Chaga. That's the problem, Doug. Yeah. Gotta get them off their Chaga. Hey, you know what, Doug? Here's something people don't know. Chaga was used by Chinese thousands of years ago, and the emperors were using it. And what they found out, this is a historical fact, that extended their lifetime by years and years and years. So they didn't allow it to be used by the common people. That's a historical fact. They kept it from the common people, and they used it, and their lives were extended by years and years and years, and the common people died when they were supposed to. That's a historical fact. I looked into that. I studied it, and it is a fact. They kept it away from the people, and they used it themselves. But Chaga is an extension of your life. It is the most incredible mushroom on the planet. I'm living proof of that, Doug. I'm 66 now, buddy, and I have no problems with my body. None.
Cool.
It's just like it's clicking on 8 cylinders all the time. And I've abused this lots in my lifetime. At points in my life, I abused it. Nothing we're proud of, but it seems to be working very well now. And I've been drinking Chaga now for about 6 years of my life.
Cool.
So get on it, folks. But if you
have, where do you find it?
Where I get mine, the last batch of Chaga I got came from 150 miles south of the tree line. It's an old growth birch forest, way, way up north, really cold conditions, old growth birch with big hunks of Chaga on it. And the Chaga I got is just got recently is probably the best Chaga I've ever had. But the best Chaga actually in the world right now comes from Siberia. They are rated number one for their Chaga for the concentrates of nutrients in their Chaga. Believe it or not, the second rated Chaga in the world comes from Northern Ontario. There you go, guys. Wow. Right in your backyard. And then the number three, believe it or not, comes out of Northern British Columbia and the Yukon. Wow. So, you know, I can't talk about it enough. I've talked about it many, many times on my shows. All people have to do is go on the internet, punch in YouTube and look at Chaga Mushroom Superfood. Go watch that video for 10 minutes and your jaw will drop. And that's all I'm going to say about it today. But it is absolutely one of the greatest gifts from God ever put on this planet. Detoxifies your body, super builds your immune system. I never get sick, Doug. The only time, buddy, honestly, in the last 5 years, I got knocked down once by a very, very bad flu bug. And at that point, I'd actually run out of Chaga. I had none. And I was off Chaga for about 6 or 7 weeks, and I got nailed with a flu bug. And people that listen to my shows, they'll remember a period there for about a month where I wasn't well enough to even go on the air and talk. And that really has to be bad for me. But I got back on it again, and since I've been putting in my body regular, I've been around sicknesses all the time, and I just don't get sick, buddy. So there's so much to be said about it, so much. And we don't have enough time to talk about it all, but just go look at it, guy. You know, the other best thing you can do in your life, folks, and I've talked about this many times, take cannabis oil in your body every day, period. High concentrations of THC, because that THC is so important to your body, and your body will acclimate it to it. Doug, I take a capsule every morning, and if you took what I took right now, you'd lay down for the rest of the day, and you would sleep, and you'd be there in la-la land, and you wouldn't feel a pain in your body. It won't kill you, but you wouldn't be able to function or get up and walk for about 12 hours. But what happens to the human body, folks, is that when you start putting THC into your body acclimates to it. So now I take this capsule every morning. I make oil because I'm allowed to grow here in Canada now. So I render down oil and I put it in little capsules. I weigh out about a third of a gram. And I take that every morning as soon as I get up. And I'm like, honest to God, folks, after about a half an hour after I take it, it's like somebody put the lights on in my brain. It's like portals open up in your brain. And why that's happening, believe it or not, is that these cannabinoids open up receptors in your body. So when you saturate your body with these cannabinoids, it enhances cell-to-cell communication in the body. And I talked about that earlier. I'm no expert on this, but I talk to doctors about this, and I get them on my show, Doug, and they explain to me that once your body is communicating properly, it's capable of handling just about anything. But our cells suffer so much breakdown in society today because of the exposure to GMOs and chemicals and everything else they're doing to us. So here's something that you can grab and kind of run with, guys. That's my blurt for the day.
Oh, that's wonderful.
We're down to about 3 minutes, Doug. And of course, you know, every time I get on with you, it goes real quick. You actually allowed me to talk this hour, and I appreciate that. but yeah, let's talk for a couple more minutes, and I'm gonna have to let you go, brother.
That's okay. I appreciate you inviting me on. Thank you, Barry, for having me back, and Steve, of course, for being your producer. He's a wonderful man. But ladies and gentlemen, please. Research. Don't take anything verbatim off, even from what Barry and I have to talk about. Go look it up. Go research it for yourself. Go look up Chaga. Go look up common law. Go do the research. Once again, you know, that locks it into your brain because now you know it to be a fact rather than just having me say it or Barry say it or somebody else say it. But you can't just be a follower. In this world that we live in today, Barry, followers are going to get crushed. We've got to create leaders here because there are so many followers, and they're following like lemmings off the cliff. And that's the sad part of it, isn't it? You know, you watch these followers put the mask on. Walking around in the rain with a mask on, with a wet mask on. Yeah, you might find that comedic.
These people are dead serious about, and
they're followers. And you try to help them to understand that they're killing themselves. And they don't want to hear it from you. They don't want to do the research. They're quite happy with turning on MSN and having that, you know, they may as well, you know, plug it into their brain, put a USB port on the side of their head and then stick it in their brain and have it downloaded. It makes it so much easier than sitting in front of the TV with a beer and a bag of chips.
So true. And where can people find, you know, I'm sorry if I laugh at some of the things you say, Doug, but it's just absolutely insanity. Oh. So, of course, it triggers that reaction with me, and I can't hold that back because some of the things you think of, you talk about, it's like, where has sanity gone in our world? It's completely gone. We have no common sense left in our world. Where can people find you, Doug?
MythIsCanada.ca.com. Myth is Canada on Facebook. We have Myth is Canada on Twitter. Myth is Canada on, now we have a new DLive channel. Myth is Canada on DLive. Myth is Canada on YouTube, but we're migrating over to DLive with that. We're the Myth is Canada on Righteon. So
cool. And you do roundtables every week.
Yeah.
And tune in, well, guys, because the roundtables are great.
We try to. And yes, Barry, I've written you down. We'll see if we can't get you on a roundtable coming up real soon.
Well, I look forward to that, Doug. Thanks for joining me again today, and I look forward to our next conversation.
Me too.
Okay. Always fun. Folks, I'm going to be back in about 4 minutes. I'm going to take another bathroom break because I'm drinking a lot of coffee today, which isn't really good for me, but got to be on my toes when I'm talking to guys like Doug. I'll be back in 4 minutes. Thanks again, Doug, for joining me. And I've got Wayne Peters coming up and Kevin J. Johnson. Hang around, guys. This is going to be good. Back in four.
www.peoplesinternetradio.com. Seeking solutions.
Okay, folks, we're back for the second hour here, or third hour, I should say. I got Wayne Peters coming in a second, and I've got Kevin Johnson here with me right now. For Kevin's Johnson, for Kevin's listeners, my show is going out on People's Internet Radio. My show is called The Big Puzzle, and as always, it's a pleasure to have Kevin in. What can I say? Great individual, and I'm looking forward to being joined by Wayne, who's another great individual, and I know there's lots we're going to talk about here in the next hour. I'll start off with Kevin first. Boy, I've been watching some of the videos this week, Kevin, and all I can say is kudos to you, buddy.
Wayne's here now. Hey,
listen,
Barry,
first off, thanks for having me on the show. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, my friend. The videos this week have become more necessity than they have anything else. The lockdowns that we've got in Ontario, Manitoba, and Calgary, Alberta right now are crazy. And this whole thing about mask wearing is completely and totally out of control. So what I do is I go live on Instagram now, which is Instagram.com/Kevin J. Johnston. Every time I go shopping, brother, I flip Instagram on just in case something crazy is going to happen. Typically, my biggest concern is an overzealous security guard where we had just in eastern Toronto. It's a place called Scarborough. It's a mall that's predominantly Chinese businesses. A white guy walked in there, heaven forbid, without a mask, which he's legally entitled to do. And not one, but seven security guards sat on top of this guy, and they still couldn't hold him down. So that says everything you need to know about how tough security guards are not. But either way, when security guards begin their nonsense and their threats, that's the type of thing that I have to have live. So Instagram has become the lifesaver for me. Now everybody gets a chance to watch what's happening. But aside from that, I've also had the opportunity to talk with Laura Lynn Tyler Thompson and guys like Wayne Peters and so on privately, and Derek Story privately. The picture of how ugly things are is painted very clear for me. So I will be doing a lot more live shows than I've ever done before, because there's just so much to talk about and so many rights that people have that they should know.
Talking about Wayne Peters, he's joined us now. Wayne, thanks for joining us today.
Wayne, how are you? Wayne? Wayne?
He's here. I know he's here. Okay, well, eventually Wayne will speak. I guarantee it. He might be having a difficulty with his phone or something, but he is in the room. And I'll tell you, I've listened to a lot of the shows that you've done with Laura Lynn. What an incredible lady she is, man.
Fantastic lady.
Unbelievable. I wish Canada would, like, we got to make a clone machine, because we could clone a whole bunch of these really great people, because we need thousands of them like her out there right now, Kevin. This is really, really – you said it there a second ago. We can't emphasize the level of trouble we're in. Are you with us, Wayne?
I'm here. Have you got me muted?
No, you're here. How are you doing?
Wayne Peters, how are you, brother? It's been too long. Is he hearing us?
I don't know. Well, he just spoke there, so
I hear you. I hear you.
Okay, well, is there a delay? Because, anyways, welcome to the show, Wayne.
I appreciate you giving me a chance to come on again. Very much appreciated.
Well, I
love hanging out with you guys.
Well, I've been looking forward to this last hour, because I got two great guys in here, and when you get two great guys in, it makes for great conversation, always. I know you're in Calgary. Talk about that convoy, if you can, for a minute today, Wayne. That was pretty crazy, eh?
You know, it was something that they tried to keep under the radar. We're not sure how exactly the local law enforcement figured it out, but they showed up at the rally point and decided that they were going to escort us. Now, this was rather interesting, because it was the Calgary City Police, and their jurisdiction stops at the city of Calgary. This convoy went out to a place called Cross Iron Mills, which is about 25 kilometers outside of Calgary. And they dutifully escorted us all the way to a mall up there, this giant, giant mall. And they watched as we walked in, and they followed us in, and they went and had lunch in the food court while we were covering this convoy and group of people making their walking around the mall, making their statement for hour and a half, something like that.
And what were they wearing? What were they wearing? Tell people.
Oh, this was absolutely amazing. I believe it started in Europe, but these folks were, there was, I think, 8 or 10 of them. We're all wearing biohazard waste suits, like the white paper type of disposable painter suits and white masks. And they just wandered through the mall. They didn't say anything. They had a little recording where they were, it was just kind of this robotic voice saying, trust your government. They won't lie. You know, lockdowns are required. And, you know, just kind of making this statement against what was happening. And it was bizarre. It was truly bizarre because this mall is huge. Like, it's hard to picture. This thing probably covers 20 or 30 acres. And there was thousands of people throughout this mall. It takes you an hour to walk around it. And the whole world stopped wherever they just marched and walked slowly in a single file through the mall. And the shock and awe was mind-blowing.
Well, hey, Wayne, I want to ask you this. Whose side were they on? First off, I want to just re-describe what you said there, because I saw the live feed from Derek's story today where you had, what, seven people in fake hazmat suits, white suits with white tragedy masks on with, you know, the frowny face on it. And I heard something, but what exactly were they saying in the mall?
Well, and that's exactly it. All they had was just this robotic recording that was just recycling the same message, mocking, you know, as if the government were pumping this over the PA when you walk through the mall and they're telling you, oh, wash your hands, safe distancing. Basically, it was a mechanized recording of that. Okay, so it was very clear they were pumping, and the idea behind this is with these new lockdowns, these people were in compliance of the laws. This is the nonsensical level that the government is enforcing on people, that the only way that they can, you know, protest without being jumped upon was in such a fashion. The security guards had absolutely no idea what to do. it was quite bizarre. I did overhear as I was passing by one of the stores, I could hear somebody saying, they should be masked. And the guy, the response to them was, they are wearing masks, dumbass. French is the direct quote.
I was laughing my guts out when I saw that, Wayne. What a way to get through to people's brains. Get them laughing at the idiocy of what's going on. And it gets rid of the fear virus for a minute. They go, what is going on here? Go
ahead. It does. But Wayne, let me ask you this, because Barry's in British Columbia and I'm in Toronto right now. What is the general feeling of Calgarians right now with this new curfew that they have and this new lockdown? Go ahead.
Well, it's really a mixed bag, quite honestly. There's absolutely those that are 100% convinced of the propaganda, but I think the overwhelming majority are the sheer extremity of all of this is just it's so ridiculous and nonsensical that even people that have never spoken out in their lives before are coming down to take part in any kind of event. At this point, they really don't care what it is, who it is, what group it represents. They're just down there to take part and
right. Okay, but the thing is, I have to really cover also, have you been downtown Calgary lately? Because I've been watching a lot of what Pastor Archer Palwoski's been doing, and I wanted to get your take on the feel in the downtown core as opposed to the suburb shopping malls. Go ahead.
It's been absolutely impressive, I have to say. We were actually down there today. Got the footage that we're editing from what's happening today, but and an interesting note that we may see on the news tonight is that we were told before we got there that they had closed down the Olympic Park due to the level of the numbers of protests that were going on. And so the very first thing I did when I got down there, because anybody that's following this knows that Pastor Arthur is right. He feeds the homeless directly across the street from City Hall at the Olympic Park Plaza.
Right.
And ordinarily, there are hundreds of people lined up, zero social distancing, waiting their turn to go on the skating rink and skate. Today, there was signage all around the park There was almost nobody there, and CBC was there filming something or another, and I suspect that it would be a piece that we'll see on the on their, you know, a Mockingbird Media Tonight stating something along the lines of the anti-maskers have shut down the park. We have been forced to close the year, you know, shut you off from your only entertainment left in the downtown core has now been taken away from you because of these protesters. That's the message that they're going to deliver. But yet last night we saw 1,000 or 1,500 people, and most of them were unfamiliar and new faces that were out in the cold protesting.
Okay, wait, hey, Wayne, I got to ask you this, because in Toronto, it's gotten to the point now, nobody trusts the mainstream media. So whenever they show up, it's no longer just me that's putting a camera in their faces and calling them fake news. And in Toronto, at the Adamson's Grill, both CTV and CBC had people with big, thick, black permanent markers writing on the white paint saying fake news, and they're writing on the windshields and the back windows. How are Calgarians and Albertans in general reacting whenever CBC and CTV show up?
Well, there's the odd. What we're seeing is less. How do I put it? Reasonable response, and those that are in support of the media pretty much identify themselves really quickly with extreme abuse. And we're seeing, last night there were some vehicles that were targeted that were parked nearby the event, horrible notes wishing them death. Today I do have to give the guy props for being creative. I got called something that I hadn't been before. I was actually labeled an ignorant inbred because I was
they called you that. Event.
That's a new one.
Right?
What do you think of next?
Yeah, you know, I give him, you know, high marks for you know, coming up with something new, but I just smiled and said, you know, you would help your argument if you got a little more informed, but I mean, you come to expect it, right?
Wayne, let me ask you this also. I mean, because they say this to me all the time. Whenever the CTV guys and City TV, Huffington Post, whenever they're all in the same area, what I'll do is I'll point my phone. Usually I'm on Instagram when I'm doing it. I'll point my phone at them and call them fake news and ask them why it is that they feel they've got the right to lie to the public. And what they'll do is they'll come out flat out and say that I'm not a real journalist. So let's say this. Have any mainstream media come at you or Derek Story or Pat King or Mark Friesen out there in Alberta and called you names such as not a real journalist? Go ahead.
Well, I think there's, in my experience, what I've sort of experienced so far is a very different kind of journalism or personnel, shall we say, within the establishment media party. They're a little more, they're not as engaging here. I'm pretty sure that they're aware of who we are out here. It's a smaller community. The cities are smaller. And I'm pretty sure that they just avoid us like the plague. And they just don't want to have anything to do with us. They come early to these events, take their clips and bits before things actually start to get going, so they can say, you know, there's only a couple dozen people there, that kind of thing. They look for either known people that are, you know, extremely open in their opinions, and they'll try and spin things like that. It's pretty common. Mm-hmm. The tactics are the same, but they're less aggressive here, I would say.
Interesting.
They're depending more on their own following. I think they believe they have a stronger following and a commitment to the media out here than they do out east, and that's just my sense of how they move around the community here.
Okay.
I love where this show's going, guys, because quite honest, you guys are frontline and I'm sitting up here in the north kind of isolated. So continue. I love where it's going. Continue with the
questions. Gary, I hate to be the guy asking questions on your show. I mean, but
No. I love where it's going.
I've been bouncing back and forth between Toronto, Niagara Falls, Hamilton area in the province of Ontario. And the reaction is the same out here with everybody who's in a store. Now, Toronto, Mississauga, and Windsor, those are the cities that have the shutdown, the complete lockdown.
Right.
But even then, the stores are still open. And I want to just say this, guys, is that it's typically whenever I walk into a store, it's almost always women who are the ones who are militant about mask wearing, where not only will they ask if you have a mask, but they'll literally tap their face, pointing at their own masks on their faces. You know, and men will just say, sir, do you have a mask? And when you say medical, women do not accept the answer, and men do. I mean, even the police. You know, Peel Regional Police, for example, when I was leaving for Calgary last month, some left-wing idiot came by and decided to try to debate with me. I was beating him thoroughly in debate, so he attacks me instead, comes at me and hits me, grabs my phone. So with the when the cops came by after I called them to file a proper report, the police said, sir, I noticed you're not wearing a mask. I said medical, and the police officers just said, okay. The head of security of the airport, male, said, okay. There was another guy who was the bodyguard for the head of security of the airport. He said, sir, do you have a mask? I said, medical. He says, okay. But then there's a whole bunch of women, maybe about 30 plus, who all work in the airport. They would ask me over and over, where is your mask, sir? Where's your mask, sir? Sir, where's your mask? And then on the plane itself, you know, there was a steward. I don't call them flight attendants. There's stewardesses and there are stewards. The stewardesses, sir, where's your mask? Put this mask back on. It just they sound like cats and violins that are in the dryer. I mean, it's horrible to listen to them. And the guy would just say, you know, sir, wear your mask when the ladies come by. That's how he would say it. So, Wayne, the question I've got for you is, what's the dynamic like? How are the women out there versus the men when it's time for someone to tell you to put a mask on your lovely face? Go ahead.
I don't know if there's a difference per se in that here. I don't know if it's because the lockdowns were a little longer getting here in the extremity out west for as harsh as they are. But it's pretty much an even Steven, I think. And I think it's all mostly born out of frustration. I've had one of our friends was accosted for not wearing a mask in a gas station. And when she came out of the gas station, the guy literally tried to bump her with his car while he was screaming out of his window that she was white trash, right? So this was a guy doing this. Guy that called me inbred. Well, the person today was a man that called me inbred. He was the only one that challenged really anybody or anything. So I think it's not something that we can label as being gender targeted or gender affected out here.
In Calgary, that's a fair statement to make, because I did notice, Wayne, that chicks are cooler in Alberta than they are in Toronto. Go ahead.
Well, I'm an Albertan, so I have to agree, right? But I think here there's a different dynamic at play in the fact that the resistance that, for example, Tory in Toronto has received is very different than the resistance Nancy in Calgary has received, in the fact that they're both cut from the same cloth as mayors. They are both sold out to the same agenda. They're both getting their carrots from the same master. But in Calgary, we have a much smaller population. So the resistance here is much louder than it might seem. Even though there's more people in Toronto, it's not as loud as what it is here in Calgary. And in the same respect, the establishment media gets the same treatment. When I watch the media pages in Toronto and Ottawa, there are people that are against there, and they go on to the establishment pages, mainly their opinion. But it's not as high a percentage as it is in Calgary. There's more pushback in Calgary. The people are more outspoken and public. They don't know what's going on. And I think that's partly born of the frustration that since the Liberal takeover of Canada, I don't think any province has experienced as much abuse as Alberta. So that may play into it as well. But the media is scared, more afraid, I think, in Calgary and Edmonton. And we're seeing this actually play out in the real world, where the police now are not checking at any of that. Simply because of the optics. When they're around, the cameras are up and people are watching and paying attention. And these guys, smaller communities, it's harder to hide in smaller communities, right? So the police themselves, I don't think they're actually very impressed with what's going on. None of this is making their jobs any easier whatsoever. They didn't sign on by law enforcement officers, and they don't want to get caught in the optics of this. So they're playing a different game here. I mean, they're still doing the same things, but they're playing it a little bit differently here, trying to be more subtle and coy and manipulate the public sentiment against those that are protesting. So everything you hear, regardless of the discussion of the protest or the event, is all labeled as anti-mask, anti-mask, anti-mask.
Got it. Okay. So I'll tell you this, Wayne. I've had a number of conversations out here with a lot of people that are on my campaign team now. Funny enough, it's not even 2021 election year yet, and I've already got a team of 32, which is 7 more people on my campaign team than I had in Mississauga throughout the entire year of 2018. Cool. And as we're running ideas past each other here, we all agree that even though I will make Calgary a sanctuary city for legal gun owners, right now, people are not one bit concerned about Justin Trudeau trying to take guns. Everybody wants to take the mask off and go back to work. So here's what we're going to say, and I'm pretty sure that Calgarians are going to love it, and this is not me campaigning on an empty promise. You guys know damn well I'm going to do this. But number one is all COVID restrictions are gone. Number two, if you don't want to wear a mask, you don't. Number three, whichever bylaw officer and or police officer gave out the most fines between now and the day that I take office is fired. That's the way that's going to work. I am putting everybody back to work here, and I'm going to remind every single member of the staff of the City of Calgary and the police, we're public servants. We serve the public first. The public pay us. They pay taxes that they don't want to pay our salary. Everybody wants to go back to work. Everybody wants to take the mask off that I've spoken to, with the exception of the extremists. There are extremists out there that think that this thing is real. So let me ask you this. If we are telling people that all COVID restrictions are gone, how do you feel, Wayne, that people in Alberta are going to reply or respond to that?
I think the average person that's not announced is absolutely going to respond, in like mind. You're still today it's a giant machine, right? So and until the fear of the actual illness is gone, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be on the fence. Either that might not be enough for them, but I do fully believe that over the next month or two that insanity is unsustainable. It is 100% unsustainable, and we're seeing such a huge pushback, and the medical establishment is starting to take part, whether you have a purge behavior or not. And I think that the opportunity to use that in the discussion is not there yet, but come February-ish, I think it could be more leaning in that regard. But it's absolutely what I feel needs to be the top of the discussion, because what we're seeing nationwide is municipalities taking it upon themselves to be mini global law writing tyrants, and this is not acceptable. People don't understand that there's really no difference in the sentence of not cutting your grass or not wearing a mask.
Right. I get that. But since you've been on the ground there for the last 3 weeks, it's really a matter of I'm counting on your observation, because you are a clever guy. I mean, smarter than most. So I'd like to know, really, how do people truly feel about the disease? Do they think that this thing is real and deadly, or are they just wearing the mask out of fear of a possible ticket?
My personal observation is that about probably 75% of the population is terrified of the government, and they'll wash their hands to deal with the virus.
Sorry, you're breaking up there. Did you say that 75% of people are just afraid of the ticket? They don't really want to do this?
They're terrified of the government and the repercussions. The social
terrified of the government. Okay. Yeah, sorry.
Government and the social demolition.
No problem, Wayne. It's just the problem is you're breaking up. I'm not hearing anything that you're saying, really. It's like I'm getting every third word.
Yeah, you got a bad reception or a bad connection there, Wayne. Maybe you could see if you can fix that a little bit or something. So we're having a hard time understanding it, my friend.
My apologies. I'm on a phone here, so it's up to the carrier.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not a signal issue that I can adjust, so I apologize for any issues.
General consensus I see right now in the population is that there's still, I would say, 60% of people that are going along with the government narrative, but I see a huge rise in people that are becoming aware and awake and are absolutely infuriated. That's what I'm seeing.
Well, the rate of that growth of anger as these people find out that they have been duped, that's what's driving the explosion in anger. Like, I mean, people, all kinds of things will make somebody angry, but nothing will make anybody as angry as scaring the shit out of them.
Right? Yeah, we'll watch your language. What I'm seeing is people that agree that are people that this is really bothering them, but unfortunately you're forced to put on a mask to go into a store to do your groceries. You're forced to put on a mask. They don't know their rights and they're not willing to stand up because they don't know their rights. And I'm going to take a couple minutes here because I've got to get Kevin to speak on this because there's a couple people listening right now that want to hear this, Kevin. People want to get involved. They want a way of getting back at this government. The mechanism that you've talked about a lot is suing these people. Can you speak on that just for a couple of minutes and exactly what
absolutely
needs to be
I
done?
Can. All right, listen up, everybody. And this is very important. I had a private meeting about this, so I want everyone to really pay attention here, and I want you to expand your minds a little bit. If we decide we're going to file lawsuits, I have learned my lesson here in the province of Ontario in that the province of Ontario is not going to let me or any other conservative win against the left-wing government of Ontario, period. However, this is the thing about the general public. The general public will accept anything as fact so long as that fact is inside of the confines of a lawsuit or a government document. We are not going to ever get the left-wing media to be fair to us, and we're not going to get our lawsuits heard. However, if we are getting thousands upon thousands of people to file lawsuits against individual politicians, we can begin to bankrupt them. Let's say, for example, Mississauga Mayor Bonnie Crombie. We know that she is a complete narcissistic psychopath, just like someone else we know in Calgary, Naheed Nenshi. What if we brought 1,000 lawsuits against her personally, but also her three biggest funders? And in those lawsuits, we write down the exact truth, but you can word it any way that you want, just so long as it's true or you believe it to be true, such as her involvement with the Muslim Brotherhood, such as her involvement with Communist China, such as the fact that she's helping to launder money in the city of Mississauga. If 1,000 lawsuits came in with very similar wording, everybody in the city who knows about these lawsuits begin to cast doubt. Those lawsuits, she has to file a defense on each and every one of them at $50 per defense. 1,000 is $50,000. If she's using city funds to defend them, then we can charge her with fraud. We could begin to charge her. We get 1,000 people across the country to lay private charges. So what I've done for everybody here is I spoke to an individual. This guy he's wealthy, and he's decided to make things a little easy for us. But at the same time, he's not going to spend his money on this. He's going to match whatever I bring in. That's what I'm trying to say to you here. He's matching what I bring in. He's registered a corporation inside of the province of Ontario. And every single human being on the planet Earth is now an officer of that corporation. I will announce what I'm allowed to announce tomorrow, being Monday. Now, with that, anybody who wants to file lawsuits against all of these people, politicians, chiefs of police if they've done something wrong, bylaw officers specifically, add their families if you know their names. If anybody out there knows the names of bylaw officers and the names of their spouses, add their spouses. We now need to interfere with their private lives because they're destroying our private lives. And we can't allow people to do this that we pay and then go home and sit comfortably with their family while our families are starving. No, we have to make their families starve too so that we can get our point across. We're not going to use violence. We're not going to break their windows. We're not going to threaten them. We're not going to do any of that. That's Antifa tactic. Because if we do that, we're not going to be listened to. But imagine if one bylaw officer got a couple of hundred lawsuits with his wife's name on that. Could you imagine? All the turmoil that's going to exist within that household. He'll probably quit the job. And that way we've got our message across that picking on we the people who pay your salary is the wrong thing to do. So if you're putting down that corporation as the plaintiff, when that lawsuit invariably either makes it to the first hearing or otherwise, and any costs get assigned to you, the person who sued, the costs will go against that particular corporation. And that corporation will do what it does to get rid of the fees. So nobody out there is going to be on the hook for any legal fees at all, aside from the initial cost to file the suit, which in Ontario for small claims is $95. I am being trained tomorrow, in fact, Monday, in how to file lawsuits at zero cost. Because as I've learned, justice must be available to everyone, regardless of race, creed, color, religion, height, sexual orientation, whatever is wrong with you, mental illness. Justice needs to be there for everyone, including those who are rich, who can afford to pay for it, and those who are broke, who cannot. So each and every one of you out there who's broke or doesn't have the money or just doesn't want to spend the money on any more court documents because they have enough of our money, we're going to be able to use these forms to have the fees waived. So Canada, we need to bankrupt our politicians and their families and their cash suppliers. It's a war that we can wage financially, just like China has waged against the Western world with economic shutdown. We can shut down their own personal bank accounts by driving them crazy, defending lawsuits that are going to come in every hour of every day. And, yeah, go ahead.
No. I'm saying what a great bunch of information, Kevin. And I'm going to urge people to tune in and listen to you tomorrow. At the end of the show, I'm going to give you the opportunity where they can listen to all your different avenues. But I think this is probably one of the most important things that people can grasp right now. We're all looking for a mechanism to get back at these people that are stomping on us. And here it is, folks. Go ahead, Wayne. Money. What do you think?
Interfere with their money. Interfere with their private time. When you're serving here, I can't tell you how to serve in any other province except for Ontario, because I've only ever legally served court papers in Ontario. I was a paid process server for a while, and I just did it for kicks for a while. But the rules state this, that if you know where the person lives or works, you can serve them at work. Nothing's more humiliating than walking into somebody's place of business and saying, "Are you John Smith?" He says, "Yes." "You have been served a lawsuit." Hand it to him. Walk away. If he won't take it from you, just put it on the floor within 6 feet of him and walk away. As soon as you serve, you must leave. Don't dance. Don't laugh. Don't giggle. Don't smile. You know, don't floss. Don't do any of that stuff. Just get out. Leave. But if you know if they're at home and they're hiding behind the door, ring the doorbell. Then ring it again. Then ring it again. Then ring it again. Then knock. Then ring it again. Ring, ring, ring. Don't go to the backyard. Don't go to the side door. Don't climb on their balcony. Don't climb on their roof. Don't climb the TV antenna and dance on the roof. Just stay at the front door and ring and knock. They will call the police. The police will come by. You will say, "Hello, constable. My name is, I am the plaintiff or process server for this lawsuit here. Read the docket number or the court, the lawsuit number, and then tell the officer that you'd prefer it if they were to give you some space. Because for them to interfere is obstruction of justice. Thank you, officer." Smile. Right? Never be rude. And then continue to ring the doorbell, including at midnight or, you know, 1:30 in the morning or whatever it might be. And as soon as the person that you're serving answers the door, hand it to them, say that they've been served, and leave. Get in your car and go, or go to the sidewalk and walk away from the home so that you're not being accused of stalking or otherwise. I'm getting a comment here on Instagram saying it's okay, just a waste of my time and a pain in the butt. Well, yeah, I guess it could be. But let's say that 100 of you hired me for a buck, because that's what I'll do it for if it's going to be in Mississauga or wherever I might be. If you hire me to do this every single day, I, of course, will do this every single day. And I'll do it live on Facebook, and I'll do it live on Instagram, and whatever other platform I can go live on. We want to make sure that people who are doing this to us are as uncomfortable and angry and agitated as we can possibly make them within the confines of the law. We're not going to break the law to do this.
Wow. What do you think of this, Wayne?
I think that's for the average person, that's going to be more than they can even begin to think about achieving or taking part in. And for those that can or will, great. For people like me that are under a constant hail of information and drama, I would encourage people to get behind groups like the Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms here, who has just launched cases against the governments here in Alberta, and I believe one other province already, and they're arranging cases for others as well. And incidentally, these guys must be over the target because they have been drawing the ire and attention of the radical enforcement arm of the left-wing party already. And so that's a pretty clear indicator when the Anti-Hate Network starts targeting law firms specifically with the intent to discredit and destroy the individuals working at said law firms, that they're on the right track to something. And sure. I mean, this is for, like I say, for those that can't or aren't able to or don't have the time or the ability, I would highly, highly encourage them to give their supports to people like that are the tip of the spear for these kinds of operations. And for those that can, you know, go after the money train that feeds these aspiring tyrants, you know, I don't see any reason why the people that fund people like Nancy and Crombie, they shouldn't be paying a price of public scrutiny as well.
Yes, and I just got to clear up.
If they're paying for it, they need to be under public scrutiny.
Wayne, I just got to clear up, though, for a few things. I got some question marks flying up here at Instagram as to what anti-hate is. It's a website called anti-hate, ANTIHate.ca. The two main players in it is a complete loser named Evan Balgord, who chose to be a stalker for Faith Goldie. He was following her around everywhere. I mean, like, I bet he was trying to find her old Kleenexes to sniff them. That's how gross this guy was. Well, and you know, the other I just want to finish off. The other guy, his name is Bernie Farber. Now, Bernie Farber's Jewish, but he's a hardcore fundamentalist anti-Semite. He's a Jew that hates Jews. He is extremely dead set against Israel. He's made it clear he wants Palestine not to coexist, but to destroy Israel. He is one of those guys who slanders anybody who hires him to do so. He's also gutless. He actually told myself and David Menzies he would join us live on three separate occasions on the show that David and I used to run called Rebel Yell. And he would back out 5 minutes before. He'd say, "Oh, I can't make it. Bad traffic." And I'm thinking, dude, we were on the same highway that you supposedly are on. It was smooth sailing. I got here half an hour early. These are gutless individuals, but their funding comes from a man whose name I'm not allowed to give you yet. But I can assure you the man who's doing it, I happen to know, is funding the ARSA terror group in Myanmar to the tune of $1 million per year. This is a guy who launders money through his restaurants in the province of Ontario and North America wide. And the other group, of course, would be the lawyers for that same guy. A lot of illegal money coming in from Pakistan's ISI funds this online site, and they are a domestic terror group. No matter how you look at it, antihate.ca is a terror group. I'm on their website right now, and there you can see on their webpage immediately that they've got Charles McVitie, who runs the Canada Christian College. They're calling him a bigot and a racist right there on their homepage. And then you move down a little bit, and they've got an article about the fact that Christians hate LGBTQs. They can't back it with facts. This is just the stuff that they say. This is a very, very highly anti-white and anti-Christian and anti-Semitic group who gets government funding and are allowed to say whatever they want about anyone. All they do is slander and libel. That's who antihate.ca is. So, Wayne, thanks for bringing them up. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Well, that's a bit of it. What they actually are is they're the unofficial enforcement arm of the Marxist regime driving the global governance. And they are against anything that we hold fundamentally valuable in our culture, in our Western democratic nations. So this is why, where it's too simple to say that Bernie Farber is this or he is that, because he really isn't. He really is all about the globalism and the money. So he is a profiteer. And when you look at who his closest associates are, in people like Warren Kinsella and George Soros in the Southern Poverty Law Center, and you look at their track records and where their money goes and where their money comes from, it's really easy to see who is driving this front, because it's really this Alice in Wonderland playing out. What's up is down, what's down is what's left is right. And they named themselves something very righteous to cover some very, very nefarious activity. And this all was launched on Canadian taxpayer dollars that Mr. Trudeau, and I can say that name, funded all of this to the tune of $23 million. But I challenge you to go and find the newspaper reports that were published when that happened, because they've all been removed. And every major mainstream outlet in the country was pumping, they just got $23 million. They just got a big chunk here not that long ago again. And this is what is being used. So they're using our tax dollars under this front company, and their entire sole purpose of existence is to manufacture a public enemy. That's it. That's what they exist for. So anybody that speaks anything, any truth to power against the government, they have this procedure where you will be socially destroyed, financially destroyed. They'll take your job. They'll take your bank accounts. They will come for you like the Stasi did. And this is exactly how they engage, through strong arm tactics if they can. If they can't, if that doesn't work, then you move to lawfare. And these guys are an international coalition that works against the people. These are the same people that took down David Icke in the United Kingdom. When you start to dig into how he got deplatformed, the person that led the charge on that was a fellow by the name of Richard Warman. Richard Warman is Bernie Farber's right-hand lawyer. When you look at the organizations that work with the Anti-Hate Network, and this is one that is a new one, TSAS, which is a social engineering NGO, that stands for Terrorism, Security, and Society. And this is to profile all of the patriots, all of the people that believe in the free market society, the Judeo-Christian society, the very fabrics that our nations are made of here in Canada and the United States. These are the things that they have to find ways to target. So they profile and they infiltrate and they take notes, and they've been doing this for the last 2 years at every single event across this country. They have especially created divisions within the police forces and the intelligence agencies to infiltrate and take notes. And all of these notes get sent back through this organization called TSAS. They have 350 collaborating writers who then submit the white papers to the government that determines the law and policy. So when you see Chrystia Freeland standing and talking to the United Nations saying that white nationalists and populists are the biggest threat facing the world in Canada, that's taken directly from the reports from these contributors. And if you look on their list of contributors, One of them that you'll recognize immediately in there is your buddy Evan Delgord. And also on that list is Mr. Ahmed Hussein. And also on that list is the one that has been suing Bernie Farber for identity theft for 15 years. Elise Hadigan, that's who it is.
Right. Well, okay.
Farber and Warren Kinsella involved in a conspiracy to set themselves up as experts in taking down racism and white and neo-Nazis in Canada by basically stealing this woman's identity because she took down the Heritage Front 20 years ago. So they stole her identity, set themselves up as these great crusaders against Nazis, and Trudeau gave them $23 million.
Wow.
Yeah, that's right. Plus, let me say this. There was an individual that filed a lawsuit against me for $2.5 million. I can't give you his name yet, but when I get that media ban lifted, believe me, this guy is screwed. All right. Part of the settlement was if I apologized for exposing the truth about this particular individual's involvement in paying terrorists to slaughter Hindus and Buddhists out in Myanmar, the idea here was they would let me off the hook if I apologized. Now, check this out. This is how pathetic it is when you're dealing with antihate.ca. I had to apologize to this man for exposing the truth. I had to have a camera faced at me. There could be no more than 2 inches above my head and 2 inches below my nipple line. This was actually what the lawyers wrote. All right, it's crazy stuff. I had to have a piece of paper that did not block my throat, my chin, or my face, and I had to look at the camera while I read out the apology. And then on top of that, I had to donate $25,000 to the domestic terrorist group, antihate.ca. So, yeah, that's what they wanted. Wow. I'm telling you, man. So I told the guy to go F himself with a big smile on my face, and I walked away from the meeting. That was the end of that. Then you guys know what happened beyond that. The judge just gave this man the judgment of $2.5 million without a trial. Because we live in a bizarre country where you're not protected. And that's why if anyone says, let's defund the police, I'm saying forget about that. Let's defund the entire court system. If we dismantle that whole thing, all of a sudden guys like this and groups like antihate.ca will no longer have any influence in the courts. And I'll tell you this also about anti-hate. I've been calling them domestic terrorists now since I heard about them in 2018. Do you know what the last time was they ever put me on their website? 2018. So long as you go on the attack against groups like this, you call them exactly what they're calling you, but you do it fivefold. I've been calling them domestic terrorists. I've been calling them stalkers. I've been calling them what they are, anti-Christian, anti-white, and anti-Semites. I've been calling them, like you said, Wayne, I've been using more colorful language than yourself. I'm not saying that they are underminers. I'm actually calling them a terror group bent on the destruction of Canada. I call them all of this stuff. They don't sue me because they don't want to be on the stand, and they don't talk about me on their website because they don't want me to have any free press. So I figure now what I should do is ramp up what I'm saying about these guys and maybe have pictures of them or get a caricature artist to show them picking each other's noses and being breastfed by their moms, something, so they'll start talking about me again.
Oh, man, I love you guys. I could listen, I'm not going to say, I want you guys to keep talking, honestly. This is my show, but what you guys are saying is incredible, and I want my audience to hear this for another 10 minutes, so just keep going. I'm not going to say a thing. Go ahead, Wayne.
Well, when you look at, regardless of what they call themselves, when you look at the documented history of the behavior of the people that manage that company that are, or that organization, the people who sit at the top of that organization, one of the people, fellow by the name of Kurt Phillips, and I got no problem bringing his name out there either, a Catholic school teacher from Drumheller, Alberta, who ran the ARC pages for 12 years. And who's a bona fide terrorist who literally calls out for attacks, whether it's in the digital space or the real world space. He's been, you know, dogging us for everything that we have said and done. We get a swarm, literally an army of digital soldiers come at us for whatever might be said or done, but they are typical schoolyard bullies. And it was almost laughable because in his bravado, he went on CBC last year, and CBC, our national broadcaster, did this hero piece for Antifa. And they have this guy crying the blues in Calgary because he's been threatened for because of his actions. But yet I've got photographs of this guy walking downtown Calgary with a freaking samurai sword over his shoulder, talking with Palestinian groups and this kind of stuff. But on CBC, he's a hero.
Right.
And when we try to say anything, we are immediately hammered. They have come after every bit of financing that or digital space that we own. They are incessant on it. They have kind of started to leave me a little bit alone a little bit because they cannot figure out what the backlash is every time they come at me. They seem to think that we're this super team that has high-priced lawyers and bots and software and all of this stuff. And little do they realize that people are seeing through their poison, and when they attack the people that are genuinely speaking the truth, there's going to be backlash for their actions as well, because people are becoming far, far, far less afraid of these bullies on the block.
Oh, they sure are. And here's the funny thing about Kurt Phillips. That's for anybody who's watching here on Instagram. Kurt Phillips is it's K-U-R-T. His last name is P-H-I-L-L-I-P-S. Like you said, Wayne, he is a high school teacher in Drumheller, Alberta, in a Catholic school. And he ran a website, which he's now passed off to someone else, called the ARC Collective, Anti-Racist Canada Collective. And all this guy did was slander and libel everybody who had true Christian conservative views. He works in a Catholic school, and he hates Christianity, period. This guy also, like you said, has been seen walking around with swords. But this guy, he's been seen walking around Drumheller and Calgary and Edmonton, walking around with knee pads on and carrying a baseball bat. This guy is crazy.
Oh, that part I can't testify to.
No, I can attest. I can attest to that.
The other fellow that was in the CBC documentary is the one that hangs around with swords in downtown Calgary. He's got a long-haired friend of Jesus looking guy, but he's absolutely no friend of Jesus.
No, he's not. And Kurt Phillips, he got busted because he was stupid enough to put his name down as a plaintiff in a lawsuit about a year ago, not even that. And he was outed. Finally, he was outed. Finally, we knew who it was that was hiding behind a keyboard like a coward, slandering every single decent person in the country of Canada. But the very fact, Wayne, that I can't see your name on their website for the last, 10 articles they've done, you and I no longer make the first 8 pages on their website, and neither does Derek Story. So they're catching on to the fact that every time they talk about you and me and Derek and people like us, that they do get backlash, that they are being told where to go. And eventually, once I train people on how to file lawsuits against terror groups like this, they're going to get their butts sued right off. And that is exactly what we need to do, is make losers like this, like these domestic terrorists who are very weak people, pay the price financially. Because, you know, a punch to the face, it hurts for 3 or 4 days and the bruise is gone in a week. But costing somebody $50,000, that hurts forever. Most people don't recover from that kind of an expense, period. And these guys here, most of them, like Bernie Farber, Evan Balgord, Kurt Phillips, Nigel Barif, and a few others, they all have assets that we can take. So what I'll be doing over the next year is I'll be showing not just me, but everybody else, how it is that we can put liens on their properties and hammer them with lawsuits. I mean, we're not going to be able to win these court cases until we can get a change in the government. But I'll tell you this, God help antihate.ca, Antifa, and Black Lives Matter when I am mayor of Calgary. There's going to be a lot of warrants going out for a lot of your arrests, because you terror groups out there have done your very best to destroy people in Alberta, and you're going to pay the price for it. It's a promise. Go ahead, man.
Well, this is where people, as people are becoming more and more awake and aware of what's going on, and I mean, whether they – most people weren't aware of the anti-hate. Most people at West don't even have a really good understanding of what Antifa is. But if you take a look at the collusion, literally collusion and cronyism between the mainstream media networks and these literal – by definition, by their own action, terrorist organizations, this is the danger that Canadians face when you have terrorist organizations that are media darlings of the media. This is the real world danger that people face because people aren't seeing the connection between the two. So the terrorism enforcement wing of the communism is, again, being handed directly play-by-play to the Marxists.
Exactly. I don't want to interject here, gentlemen, but we only do have 5 minutes left here, and I want to give Kevin a minute to share his media platforms with people and urge them to listen to what's going to be said tomorrow. And then, Wayne, you can do the same, and unfortunately I'm going to have to close it out. This hour went very quickly. It's an awesome show, and thanks for coming in. Kevin.
Okay, everybody, my name is Kevin J. Johnston. I am Calgary mayor-elect. And just so you do know, the term mayor-elect does not mean anything in Canada. We're simply using that term because it drives the left-wing media crazy. I am running for mayor of Calgary. I am from Toronto. I've had enough of this Marxist hellhole, and I have got a nice 3-year lease on a beautiful place right downtown Calgary. I'm going to be there for the next 3 years, and I'm going to be the mayor come October of next year. You can always follow me online where I've got my books for sale. One is called Lacrosse is Dead, where I talk about corruption within youth lacrosse and youth sports in Canada. The other one is Masks Are BS, where I talk about masks not working, why they don't work, why Corona is a lie, and all the politics behind that. You can spell my name as Kevin J. Johnston. That's J-O-H-N-S-T-O-N. Hit me online anytime at kevinjjohnston.ca. Thank you.
Wayne.
Well, I'm far more dull than Kevin, and that's one of the things that he's definitely going to bring to Calgary when he comes for the election, is he is going to give Canada an election as polarizing as you'll get in Canada. That I have no doubt. You can find me pretty much anywhere on any platform under What's Up Canada or some variation thereof, primarily on Facebook and YouTube. That said, coming in the new year, we are launching a new website with a network of truth tellers that are really going to give the media party something to be concerned about, because grassroots journalism is the opportunity of the decade, thanks to the corruption and the lies and the strong arming of the propaganda. They are creating opportunities for folks like us. And so find us on Facebook, YouTube, Parler, Telegram, anywhere. What's Up Canada?
Well, thanks, Wayne. Hey, Wayne, it was great talking to you, man. I'm going to be there in 5 days. Sorry, 6-7 days. I'll see you.
You betcha. Looking forward to it. It'll be an adventure, I'm sure.
Oh, it's going to be a blast.
What can I say?
Thank you, Barry.
Well, hey, you know what, guys? That's the least I've ever talked on a radio show in my own show in my life. But you know what? This has been a great hour, and I couldn't have asked for a better hour of two guys like you banging it off people to hear what's going on in our country and how we can really start getting back at these guys that are absolutely destroying our lives. So what can I say? Thanks for coming in. Folks, get behind Kevin Johnston. I urge you to do that. This man has got courage that Canada really should take as an example right now. And I couldn't say that more loudly. Thanks for joining me, gentlemen. Wayne, I love your input, buddy. I didn't know you were that smart. I thought all this time you were just a pretty face. So thanks for coming in, buddy.
You know what? Barry, thanks a lot. Great talking to you.
I've enjoyed this, folks, immensely, this whole show today. And I'm going to leave you with a closing thought. My guest in the first hour talked about how we can take the power back at municipal levels, how we can get control of all the narratives that are going on in our country. And we can do that by taking back the levels at municipal levels. I praise Kevin for what he's doing. I don't think Calgary is going to be ready for what's going to happen. Boy, I know you've got my support, Kevin. And I said it once and I'll say it again. I'm going to come down and do a month of boots on the ground for you, buddy. Because what we need to do now, folks, like I said, is get this back at the municipal levels and stop this insanity going on in our world.
We do.
Thanks, gentlemen.
We do.
It has been a pleasure, absolute pleasure. Folks, thanks for joining me this week. I've enjoyed the show immensely. I hope that people take a lot away from this show. Some of the things that have been said, I hope it resonates with you, and you take time to look into some of the things that have been said today. I'll be back next week, same time, same place. God bless you all. Have a great week. Thanks for tuning in, and bye for now.
You're listening to www.peoplesinternetradio.com. Seeking solutions.